Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
What up, everybody? I hope everybody's having a good day today. I hope everybody's enjoying their day, and I hope they enjoyed last week's Saturday's fights that happened on pay-per-view. We had it was a fight of the year, you know? This is your host, Dave Duenas. Got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, Boxing Scene's official radio show. And going back really quick, you know, Ivan Calderon versus Giovanni Segura, it was a back-and-forth war. You know, my pick was completely wrong. Gabriel's was right. That son of a bitch. But he got it, man. I mean, you know, I wasn't alone, though. You know, I wasn't alone. I wasn't the lone wolf McQuay on that one when it came into calling that fight, saying that, just thinking that, you know, Calderon was just going to have a little bit too much footwork for Segura. But Segura just showed the pressure that he applied was just a thing of beauty. You know, other than that, there's a lot of boxing news happening. There's a lot of stuff to talk about in the boxing world. You know, some rants, some not. You know, some of us are having some times of our lives on Ustream talking to fans rather than getting in the gym and giving what the fans want. But what do I know? I'm just a guy that does a radio show and loves boxing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually just having – that's where I was running a little late getting to the station or my house, as it were. I was having that exact same discussion. Was how depressing is it? You got like a writer today, a blogger, not a writer, decided to quit writing about boxing because Margarito and Pacquiao were fighting. You've got everybody all up in arms. They're only talking about that fight. You've got Fighter X hanging out on Ustream all night going, wow, this is great. And meanwhile, you know, I'm sitting here writing my third piece in a month on Giovanni Segura and this little miracle that happened, that Ivan Calderon, 35-year-old champion, 18 title defenses, in his home country, in Puerto Rico, guy gets knocked out. Guy gets stopped anyways. He gets TKO'd by the most unlikely of opponents, Giovanni Segura, a man that has 12 amateur fights, has only been fighting professionally for 8 years, and if you look at them skills-wise, he is not in the same league as Calderon. But he's got massive power in both hands. He's got will, and that always overcomes skill or can. When you want it, you can go get it. And he did it.
And it's
a little miracle. It's a little miracle to me. And it's the saddest thing in the world that boxing fans largely ignored it. And they have to blame.
It takes me back to the good old days when hip-hop was hip-hop, you know, when, one of my all-time favorite rappers, you know, who had passed on was Biggie Smalls, and his first cut that came out, Juiced, you know, had everybody just, you know, just feeling it, you know, because you were able to relate to him, and it reminds me of boxing a little bit, you know, when Biggie had that, it was all a dream, you know, I kind of in a way feel it is a dream now the way boxing is, you know, because I remember, you know, it was all a dream when I used to read KO Ring Magazine, Julio Cesar Chavez and everybody fight in a real ring, you know, now you don't even get that, now we don't even get fighters really honestly getting in the ring and mixing it up. You know, and I thank Segura for really putting all the world champions out there on blast by telling them, hey, give the people what they want. Do exactly what me and Calderon did. You know, a small 5-foot-tall Puerto Rican kid steps in with a guy that really overtowered him and decided to stay toe-to-toe with him. Got toe-to-toe with him in that fifth round. I mean, Calderon, if he just had a little bit more pop, it makes you wonder. No, I know Segura's got a good tested jaw, but it makes you wonder, you know, because when he was landing flush, man, it was flush.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to stop him in his tracks, too. You know, and for a moment, I wasn't really sure. I was kind of following the commentators, you know, when they said he's hurt. I don't know if he was hurt because his footwork sometimes is kind of out of whack, you know, and he would kind of, you know, stumble on himself even when he didn't get hit. But I tell you what, you know, Ivan's shots that were coming down the pipe, it was all textbook, made it look like Segura was getting hurt in that fight. And I loved it. Well, like I said, you know, it was great.
Oh, yeah. I'm writing up this story right now, and we did an interview yesterday. We'll obviously have him on the show, so I don't want to ruin it. But he did say he got a little buzzed. He got caught a couple times, but it wasn't like he'll explain. It wasn't like he was on like the way the announcer was making it seem. But yeah, he was getting you know, walking through fire. That was the thing that I believed that he was going to do, was that he was willing and able to walk through fire, and because Calderon only has 6 knockouts.
Right,
you know, and Segura actually said he does hit pretty hard, you know, because of technique. You can always add power with solid technique, and I just think it was just his time, dude. You know, Calderon.
I think
35.
So too. 35 years old, man. Mm-hmm.
It's just his time, but it really bothers me, and somebody, you know, when I was acting full time, and I'm still now, you know, I'm kind of pursuing it, but in LA, it's a different kind of full time job than when I was doing theater full time. Somebody once told me, you know, the key to this thing is doing something good for your career every day. And as boxing fans, you can kind of translate that, or as boxing people like you and I are, you know, as industry people, what are we doing every day to make our sport better? Whether it's reading a good, you know, story, or in my case, I guess getting in an argument on Twitter or over the validity of one guy's work. Which is kind of my part to clean it up. I don't personally, and I think this is I don't want to get too far into this, but people saw it on Twitter and they're probably wondering what the hell it is. To me, you know, somebody that is a blogger that is looking at my work when they're doing their work part time and just commenting on not just mine, because he's only mentioned me twice. He says he doesn't really read me. He doesn't find me very relevant, I guess. But you know, people that kind of do watchdog on the media. Well, then you got to be kind of a cut above. And you know, I'm not saying that Golden Boy tells the ring writers what to write. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is when I came to Los Angeles, I had 3 goals or 3 venues I wanted to work for, ESPN, Max Boxing, and the ring. Then the ring got bought by a promoter. From that point on, I said, I want people to actually believe in my work and see it as credible. And so I had to scratch that off the list. And that's not saying that those guys are wrong or they're shilling. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is perception is reality, and I don't want that perception. So that's what that argument was about. But, you know, I'm saying every day a boxing fan or a boxing person should try to do something positive for the sport.
Absolutely. And I agree.
You have to define that for yourself. But to me, ignoring Calderon and Segura the way it seems to have been ignored,
it was ignored.
Wrong,
I mean,
dude.
It was completely wrong, and you know, and this is the thing too, and I completely feel in what you're saying, because I've said this many times, you know, as a fight fan, there are things out there for us to do, and we just gotta, you know, I ain't gonna hold your hand, but you know, we gotta somehow unite together, and you know, stomp our feet, shout, do whatever we gotta do, just to show that, you know what, boxing is here and alive. And when it takes me to my next subject, you know, and I'm gonna announce the guests that are gonna be coming through on the show. You're obviously gonna have Ivan Calderon on the show. He's gonna be calling in about, you know, another 30 minutes. Chop it up with us a little bit about that fight and tell us what went wrong in the fight with Giovanni. Then you're gonna have Giovanni Segura call in, the guy, the man that unified the championships in the super flyweight division. Okay. Then we're gonna have Ponce de Leon, the Indio from Mexico, who's gonna be fighting on September 18th. Okay, against Antonio Escalante. That's gonna be a great fight. It's one of the best fights on the card at the moment. You know. You know, then you're going to have Hall of Famer Angelo Dundee that's going to be calling in and leaving the ring, talk to us a little bit, and let's ask him some questions about the state of boxing. But I tell you what, I'm going to go right back to what you were talking about, Gabriel, because I do got a lot to say about that. And one of the things that hurts the sport, okay, because as the little guys, we got to do what we got to do to make the big guys, the guys that supposedly really count, take notice on a sport that people are saying is dying, which I have to argue with you about, and I did argue with a lot of people about this over the weekend, all the way leading to the show. Not even a couple hours ago, I was arguing with some mojo on the street about this whole, you know, this whole thing about boxing is dying. I said, listen, boxing ain't dying, bro, okay? The problem is that Americans can't see past their nose. Okay, we can't see past the front line of our lawn, all right? The problem is Americans don't do the right coverage. When ESPN on Saturday night is showing James Toney, who my son referred to as the SEAL, being choked out, my 8-year-old goes watching this fight here and goes, "Daddy, why is that big white guy choking out that SEAL like that?" Because James Toney just stood there like a stiff board. Okay, well, Couture choke him out. I mean, that's sad. And then it shows up on ESPN. Then you don't see nothing about the coverage of Giovanni Segura, who just unified the super flyweight division in a great, phenomenal fight. A great, phenomenal fight. Yes, was the pay-per-view a little kind of ugly? I'll tell you what, UFC's got everything on top of us. I'll give them that. They got better cameras. They got better coverage. They even got better bucks sometimes, you know, when they're doing their weigh-ins. I saw a lot of boxing fans say, this is the way boxing should be covered. This is what we need to do. But I tell you what, on Saturday night, this past Saturday night, one thing we had above and beyond the UFC was a great fight, because it was not a great fight on the UFC at all.
Fucking A. And you know what? I watched it all, dude. I watched that card. You know, I had it, and I watched the Calderon card. We even saw the Corley versus Maidana, which is a hell of a fight. I have to agree with you. You know, when it comes down to it, and maybe it's an aesthetic thing. You know, maybe some dudes like ground game. I don't like watching ground game. And James Toney looked. He looks like a guy that was just like standing, like waiting for a bus, and some dude just came up and tackled him. He looked about that ready to get into that kind of fight. You know, he just did not look prepared. And you know, who knows? Maybe he didn't prepare. I have no idea, and I really don't give a shit. I really don't. But to me, you know, it's you're exactly right, dude. You know, and I think people took my Dana White interview very wrong. We were talking, and I think if you could, you know, there was a lot there in the piece, and it's kind of to me, it's kind of a dense piece, and I throw a lot of ideas at you. But we are mainly talking about American boxing, you know, boxing in the U.S. and you know, exactly. Or in, you know, North America. Like Dana made a statement. You know, that interview would have been an hour long if I started disagreeing with everything that he said. Sometimes you let a subject talk, and then you get the second interview and the third interview, and you can kind of develop a relationship where you can go deeper and kind of attack. But in this case, it was kind of like, I want to hear his points rather than fight each one of them. And he talked about how, you know, it's not really a force in Mexico anymore. That couldn't be more wrong. And you look at, you know, you look at Europe, it's doing very well there. They sell out huge seats. There was 11,000 seats in South America for the Maidana fight. You can't tell me the boxing is dying. My problem and my point was, we need to streamline a little bit. We need to have these fights like Calderon, Segura. You know, that fight could have been, you know, combined with the September 18th card for Golden Boy. Imagine having that fight on there. You add that on there, then you really got, like, a stellar card. These guys working together and streamlining so we can get to the good part where there are DVDs of boxing at 7-Eleven, and people care about it, and ESPN wants to put it on. I mean, that's a great fucking point that you just made, dude. You know, you got Dan Raphael bitching and moaning and calling Margarito all week. Well, you know what? Clean up your own house. Why don't you ask somebody why Calderon and Segura wasn't a highlight and MMA was? Worry about your own house before you worry about Margarito's freaking hand.
Exactly. And let me tell you this, too. You know, Dana White, he's a great guy that knows how to market his business, okay? And I respect that, okay? But I'm going to tell you what. The thing I won't respect is when somebody tells me that boxing is dying. When I gave a lot of the same scenario. I'll give it. I even told you, Gabe, but I'll tell it to the honest that are listening to the radio, and they, I don't know if they'll agree with me or disagree with me or not. But this is the whole thing. I just finished telling this guy, like I said, this regular Joe that we were talking, and I was picking up my kids, and you know he had a whole UFC and all that, and I told him to change the shirt. I said, man, change that shirt, man. You know, over in front of a boxing gym, put on a boxing shirt. You know, matter of fact, here, let me give you one of my shirts. You know, and. We started the whole conversation. I told him, look at this. Let me tell you this, okay? American boxing is just so in shits right now, okay, that we don't even know what to do with it. And the reason why it's so in shits right now is because of the fact we got football, you know, you got tennis. I mean, this is the shitty part about American TV, okay? You're going to have tennis coverage, bull riding coverage more than boxing coverage, okay? You're going to have NASCAR, which I got nothing against NASCAR. Don't take me wrong. Don't get me wrong about it. But where's the anticipation out of that sport? Okay, the car goes around and around and around and around. You know, I mean, I don't get it. And it's not an athlete sport to me. You know, I have an uncle that's all in the NASCAR, and he goes, no, they're the number one paid athletes. Bro, it's called athlete. These guys are they're using a machine to accomplish what they need to get done. They're not going in the gym. They're not, you know, busting up their bodies. They're not straining themselves, stressing themselves. They're not disciplining their bodies. They're disciplining a particular machine to accomplish what's going to be in front of them. Where boxing has all this one thing put in one particular moment, and that's in the ring. He's bringing everything. He's bringing his country, his family, his sweat, his tear, everything that he's going to bring, his truth and his lies. We're going to see it on one particular night for 36 minutes, if it lasts, it's 36 minutes. Sometimes they don't even last that long, okay? But that's what media is supposed to cover, is a sport. You know, that's what they're supposed to cover, is a sport. Now, I'm not knocking the rest of these sports. It's great. It's great. But when you sit there and you hear another American go, well, you know, boxing is dead. Well, this is the reason why it's dead. Because Americans can't see past their nose, you know. But let me make my point real quick with Dana White, okay? And I told the guy, listen, this is how much the people that live here in the States don't know, okay? I go, you know, the UFC have had their moments in Australia. They've even went to the UK and they've had their events, which is great and dandy, okay? But I tell you what, I won't even talk about present fighters fighting in those countries. I'll talk about past fighters, okay? Have Costa Zoo and the UFC on the same night, and let's see how many people would show up to each one of those events. And I'll guarantee you, more people will go to see Costa Zoo than they would go see a UFC. Have Joe Calzaghe make a comeback and see how many football fields he fills up. Let's see if UFC can even fill up a football field over there, you know? Have even a fighter that we don't even think highly of, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., have him fight in Mexico and watch how many people fill that up before they even hit the Mexican stadiums over there. I tell you this, in L.A., UFC events, they don't sell out that much. You know, in L.A., that's in our own backyard. More people go watch boxing in East Los Angeles and Maywood and all that than they would go see some MMA fighters.
Well, if you look at the numbers, though, here's the thing that bothers me, that disturbs me, is that we're kind of high-end, low-end. You know, we're not talking about Latin Fury, we're not talking about the Calderon Segura pay-per-view, because those are different. Those are independent pay-per-views that need to happen because you can't get on a major HBO date, right? I'm talking about, HBO pay-per-views like the Diaz-Marquez 2 and the upcoming September 18th one, and then, you know, like high-end ones of Mayweather-Marquez and Pacquiao Claudio. Those do huge numbers, right? We haven't even heard the numbers from Diaz Marquez because they're probably so low they're embarrassing. So that's a high low. They say like 300,000 to, you know, one point however many million. That's kind of a dangerous financial model to survive or to be living off of. When you look at pay-per-view for last year with, I was looking like they did like 13 pay-per-views, something like that, UFC last year. And I think they did two that hit a million. The rest were like 400,000, 500,000, 600,000. Then they'd go 450,000. Like, it was consistently middle of the road good. Like an average of 450,000 to somewhere, 550,000 sold. That's consistency. That's good promoting. That's what Kathy Duva was talking about last week, where, you know, you take two HBO dates and you get bigger numbers, but then you also go two other ones, you know, and maybe the guy doesn't make a ton of money two times a year, but he makes good money four times a year. And that's what UFC is doing, is kind of setting a foundation of kind of hitting, you know, base hit, double, triple, home run, starting all over again with the lineup.
And that's where I go back with, is that it's really honestly, if boxing fans want to start pointing the fingers at somebody and why this sport is really honestly going under in the States, hey, you need to start pointing the fingers at these networks, you know.
Absolutely.
HBO, ESPN. These guys here are the ones that are really honestly screwing this up. When Kathy was on the show, she was absolutely right. How is a network going to know how to promote a fight? They don't know how to promote a fight, you know?
No. I mean, nine times out of ten, they don't even know. They're TV executives. They have no idea why a movie does well. They just don't. They get lucky, you know, on a regular basis. So look how crappy these are now. Do you even go to the movies anymore? Because they're crap. They just kind of package stuff, and the sheep will go buy it. You know, like Avatar, I could have told you what was going to happen in that movie walking into that theater, and I was exactly
that movie,
right.
That movie alone was overhyped. And more money put into that movie, but it was a remake of Ferngully. That movie Ferngully.
It was like Ferngully on crack, kind of like Dancing with Wolves, Dances with Wolves with blue people in 3D. That's all it was. You know, that's all it was. But the point is, people like, you know, they buy fluff and they trust HBO, the heart and soul of boxing. But you look at the way they really run the business, and actually Steve Kim and I had a long conversation about this today. He's got a piece about it coming out tomorrow. How they overpay, and you know how they like they created Andre Berto. He made like $1.6 million for Carlos Quintana. Then they wanted him to take a pay cut against Shane Mosley. Well, who in the right mind would take a pay cut to fight Shane Mosley? You can't really blame the fighter. But here's another fallacy. And I was one of these people that said the sanctioning bodies, they're wrong. All these belts, they're wrong. They're not holding shit up. If you think about it, like Paul Williams was mandatory to Antonio Margarito. Do you think Margarito would have ever fought him if he wasn't a mandatory? No, he wouldn't have. You know, and the good fights that Berto was in, like the Colosso fight, that was a mandatory. That had to happen. And here's Dan Raphael on his Twitter going, wretched, disgusting, grotesque WBC at it again. Announced Chavez Jr. is a mandatory for 160-pound champ.
For Sergio Martinez. Right.
Yeah, vomit time once again. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Nobody like Paul Williams, who's advised by Al Heyman, who is in league with HBO, they won't make that rematch that we've been wanting for like a year. I guarantee you Bob Arum will make this fight. If he thinks that Chavez Jr. is ready, he will make this fight, and it will happen in a timely fashion. That's good promoting, and that's what the sanctioning bodies actually do for this sport, is make fights happen. Now, do they do stupid shit like strip guys for no good reason? Yes, they do. Do they add too many damn belts? Yes, they do. But at the end of the day, if we didn't have mandatories, Jesus, nobody would ever fight each other.
Well, you got the Berto Collazo. Remember that fight, you know? That was a mandatory fight.
Yeah,
you know?
That fight would have never happened. We'd be still watching. We'd watch, like, you know, Berto versus Mikey Rodriguez, like, for the third time, you know, although that was a mandatory as well. You know, I think that was an eliminator for the belt. But, you know, the point is that they're not the problem. The sanctioning bodies are not the problem. They don't overpay fighters. They don't have fighters fighting twice a year on HBO. They're not having these promoters fight with each other and taking their toys and going home and having their own in-house bouts. The sanctioning bodies have nothing to do with that. Not one thing. There are so many other problems besides that.
And like I said, you know, the fingers that we need to start pointing at are the American media, what they're doing to us and what they're doing to our sport. I mean, you know, you could call Dana White, Mr. Tybo Ho, whatever you want to call Tybo Ho. And, you know what? The first time I heard that, it's funny because you see a lot of boxing gyms. They're not even boxing gyms. First off, they're like karate dojos, and you go around and they'll say, "Oh, we teach boxing," and then the trainer is some guy that Tybo, or you know what I mean. And I had a bad experience with that. That's why it was so funny to me when I heard that, because this guy literally had a book. He had a book from Ring Magazine. You know, you in Ring Magazine, you can order stuff. You know, you can order. You know, first basic boxing, and this guy had a first basic boxing, the first steps of learning how to fight, and he was training kids. And my son's a fighter. He's been fighting since he was a little boy, and I'm watching this guy, and before my kid could even put on his gloves, I said, whoa. I told him, "What are you doing, man?" He said, "Hey, I'm a C-class, C-division trainer." I said, "There's no C's or B's or A division trainers, dude. Get out of here." I go, "What did you do?" And he goes, "Well, I should teach a title." So, you know, Dana, is that what you're doing, brother?
Oh, shit.
But I give you the respect. Hey, you're a multimillionaire. So, you know, if you were teaching Tybo, hey, good for you, man. You know, you used your Tybo methods to really convince people that UFC card was great and that, you know, James Toney was in shape, which I told everybody, come on, man. The circus. I mean, that goes back into what I wanted to talk about a little bit, is that, you know, this is the funny thing, okay? This is how funny Americans are when it comes to this sport, okay? Is that Dana White really honestly is doing something that Don King would do back in the days, which is like putting a butter bean, you know, and let him fight four rounds. We call him the four-round king. And now Dana's over there doing the exact same type of style of promoting, and people are buying into it. You know, first it was Kimbo. Now you got Brockner, who's a guy comes from WWE. Then you got James Toney. My whole thing is that, dude, is there not anybody in your guys' sport that can carry it on its own? Do you need a circus to have people be interested in tuning in to watch your fight? Because that pin fight was worth the crap. That's my problem. That's my beef.
Yeah, that fight wasn't good at either, man.
No.
I was not entertained by the whole thing. And to me, when it is entertaining, it looks a lot like boxing. Like that Griffin-Bonner fight, they stood up. You know, like, if I want to see a slugfest, generally I can go to boxing. But every once in a while I can go to UFC and see the same damn thing. And like I said, it's perception's reality, you know, and I've had this discussion with Z, our translator. You know, she said, like, you can dress it all up. At the end of the day, great fights sell. At the end of the day, you need great fights. And to me, that's kind of my mantra, is more great fights more often.
That's where it goes back to me, where I see a lot of people are just more into circus stuff than they're into real fights. You know, and the whole Segura and versus Calderon, to me, it was a real fight. I don't got nothing against what they're doing, like I said, doing a fantastic job and stuff. But hey, if you want to watch garbage, go for it. I want to watch real fights, guys with real skills. And that's what I'm going to keep tuning into. And that's exactly what we got Saturday night. It was a great fight. Two guys that, you know, really left it there in the ring, made sure they stepped in, made sure there was only one man that stepped out. You know, it was a little sad to hear right after when Calderon did not get back up from his standing eight count and he was out counted out on the 10th. How quiet. I mean, it was a pin drop there in Puerto Rico. You know, I think everybody was in awe. They couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe what had just happened in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was shocking, dude. I mean, well, not to me because I picked him to win by knockout. But I thought it would be a little bit longer, and I thought that Calderon would – remember, like Giovanni told us, like it's going to be like Tom and Jerry. You know, I'm going to be chasing him the whole time, but eventually if I hit him, I'm going to get him. And I was a little worried about that mentality. I was thinking maybe he thinks he needs one shot. But from the very first round – dude digs to the ribs, just keeps, you know, every chance he got, he just took a little piece of something. And you know, he just kept landing that left of the body, that it opened other things up. And to me, it's like, if I was a trainer, like, I would take that fight and I would show it to every fighter that I have. Like, see, this is what I'm telling you when I talk about go to the body. You kill the body and the head will die. And it sure did. I mean, he beat him down until he couldn't go any further. And it was something actually Z talked to me about heading into that fight. Was that she was reading she's Puerto Rican. She was reading a Puerto Rican interview with Calderon. And when the guy was done, he basically said, the interviewer said, like, I'm picking Segura because I think Calderon for the first time thinks he has something to prove and that he was trying to prove that he could stand and trade. And, you know, on this night, what he should have done was maybe put on the best Calderon performance of all time, really showed everybody exactly what he could do. And instead, he tried to be, you know, more of a toe-to-toe guy, which was great for us, but terrible for him. So I'm curious. I can't wait to have him come on. I really want to talk to him about this.
You know, the Fight Camp 360 was on today, and I think it was aired last night. I'm not really sure. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but everybody's saying it was, you know, pretty good. You know, I haven't been disappointed with the episodes, but I am going to watch it later on tonight, probably right after the show. You know, and now I know that there's not going to be a replacement, you know, for Mikel Kessler. It's going to go automatically to just as the finals and then see what's going to happen from there. Now, I know a lot of people are still accusing the Andre Ward. This is an Andre Ward tournament. But like I tell you, I still think there's a lot of people in there that are still live in that fight. I wouldn't completely, you know, have my pick with Andre Ward in these fights.
No, it's a fight, man, and anything could happen. I mean, you know, we still haven't really seen somebody clip him right on the chin. We haven't seen him behind in any of these fights, you know. There's still a lot of questions. There's still a lot of things to find out about Andre Ward. I think Alan Green didn't show up in some sense, but at the same time, you know, Andre Ward made him go away, you know. Like, I think he had an idea of things he wanted to do, and Andre just took it all away from him and beat his ass down. And that's, you know, what you're supposed to do. Now, the fights that are remaining, do you think he can lose to Durrell? I do.
You know, I think he can.
Yeah. Do you think Arthur Abraham, if he lands flush on his chin, can knock him out? You're damn right he can. So, to me, we just get to the good part, which is that final championship bout just a little bit sooner.
That's, you know, I know. I see in the chat room that's being put that Darrell versus Word is canceled. I haven't heard anything about that, but I do know that there has been some arguments about where the fight's going to be held at. I know they were talking about Reno, Nevada, having that fight there, but I don't think it's going to happen just because of the fact that both of these guys have been fighting in arenas, not in casinos, and if it's going to be a casino, there's going to be some there's going to be a tug of war about who's going to make what on out of those casinos, because there's not a lot of seatings in casinos at casinos. I'm thinking you could probably fit maybe 1,200 in a casino, small little arena theater type of thing.
I think like 16,000. If you're going like MGM, I think it's somewhere between 14 and 16. The number escapes me. And because AT&T sucks, I don't have my internet right now. So I can't look up the figure. But that fight, now I've heard it's canceled. I've heard it's not. I've heard they're dragging their feet, that neither guy really wants to face each other because they're friends. It looks like it's not going to happen. But here's the thing. They signed a contract. And if they don't fight each other, there's going to be litigation. And I don't think either guy has made the kind of money that they can afford it.
Unless they start claiming they got an eye injury and stuff. But hey, we'll get into that right now. Let's bring one of the guys one of the men out of the hour right now, Ivan Calderon. Are you there, brother?
Yeah, right.
What's up, man? How you feeling today, brother?
I'm all right. I'm feeling all right. Doing TV.
Hey, so first off, what a great fight. Me and Gable were here, we're talking about that, and we're really kind of bagging on the media of not really pumping up this fight and what it was going to be. You guys definitely gave us something to talk about for some time. The whole Mexico-Puerto Rico rivalry lived up to the hype. You guys both delivered. Puerto Rico's definitely got to keep their head up high, because you definitely showed the heart of a champion in that fight. But Calderon, let me ask you, why did you fight that fight? Why didn't you stick to what you normally do, which is box? You decided to stick and trade with them. And tell me if I'm a little wrong here, but kind of thought with your strategy kind of backfired on you, because on that fourth round, it looked like you wanted to stand there in front of them and make them miss a lot of shots, but it looked like you end up taking a lot of shots in the body, and that's what really gassed you out.
Yeah, everything started since the first round. I was trying to do my work and move around, hit and don't get hit. But he already went with the mind and the plan to do what he went to do. He hit me straight to the body. If you saw the fight, he always went to the body. He never threw to my face too much, because he knew if he throws up to my face, I was going to, weave a lot. So he started working my body since the first round. And in the fourth round, I had to stand because he stopped me and I couldn't move to the side because he started hitting me in my legs, between, in my bones, around my waist. And I couldn't have no more my movement. And he worked real good the body. And in the eighth round, he caught me with a good body shot right in the middle of the stomach. And I couldn't get my air. That's why I had to knee down and wait for the countdown.
Now, did he surprise you? I mean, after him landing them body shots, did you not expect that at all from him? Did you think that he was just gonna frame it to just being a headhunter?
Yeah. No, I thought he was gonna do all kind of stuff, head, body. But he just went always for the body. He forgot about my head. He said, "I know that every time people throw the Ivan's head, they always miss." So he decided to go straight to the body, and the work came out. He did the work. He caught me good, and he just hold my movement. And in the eighth round, he caught me with a good body shot, and I tried to stand up, but really I was so hurt that I said I can't defend myself if I stand up. So, tomorrow's another day. I could have another rematch, and I'm not going to get an ugly knockout, so I prefer to stay and wait for the counts.
Absolutely.
Yvonne, this is Gabriel with Max Boxing and with David in the Ring. Welcome. I'm curious. There was a friend of mine is Puerto Rican, and she read this interview you did right before the fight, and the writer seemed to come away thinking that you felt coming into this fight that you had something to prove, that you wanted to show that you could stand and trade. And you had talked about that in the Jesus Uribe fight leading up to that you really wanted to knock him out. I mean, not to put you on the spot, is that more like you're selling the fight, or did you really feel like you had something to prove going into this fight and that you wanted to stand and trade a little more?
Nah, for real. I didn't want to show nobody that I could have been a puncher. I didn't want to show nobody that I could stand in front of a good puncher like Segura. He just hold my movement and I couldn't do no more, so I just had to stand up and I couldn't do no more and just show that I could hold my, hold a good puncher and fight with him, because I couldn't do no more than just fight with him in that moment. So I just stand up, but I didn't have that plan. I didn't want to do that. I just had to do it in that moment.
Okay. Were you surprised how hard he hits? I mean, did he hit?
For real, I thought he was going to hurt me in the top. But whichever fighter that don't got no power punch, whoever boxer hit you real good in the body, you don't even got to have strength to hurt somebody in the body. But he didn't hurt me in none of the moments that he hit me in top of my head and in my face. He never hurt me, but he did hurt me in the body. But I didn't feel that strength that people were saying that he's a puncher, that you could get hurt. I never felt hurt up in my top. He just got me good in the body. That's all.
That's interesting. I was told there was rematch clause. I heard there was a rematch clause. Are you interested in exercising it?
Sure. We planning, to try to fight another fight with another champion and come back for the rematch the same way we just fought champions against champion. But, I want the rematch. If I don't get it straight, I just want to fight with another champion and then go back with him, do my second fight with Segura. I'm dying to fight with him because I'm sure that I could beat him. I'm sure I saw the fight, and I'm sure if I do my fight that people always like to see me do, move around since the first round and just watch myself and don't get them punches on the body and starting the round, I know I could beat him.
So, what I'm hearing right now, Ivan, is that, if there's no BS of getting the rematch immediately, you want that rather than going.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you this, if you don't get the rematch, and I'm not understanding why it wouldn't happen again unless the promoters decide to screw it all up and not allow you to have a rematch. But if you don't, do you go for another guy in your division, or do you jump up and wait a little bit to?
No.
Uh-huh.
I go up to another guy in my division and whatnot. Remember, I always say I will go up to 112 just because I just want to go and look for another fight. Just doing my last fight, it will be in 112, but I don't got no problem doing my weight. I could still fight in 108 pounds. I would love to go straight with Segura, but this is business. I believe they want me to, my manager want me to fight first for another champion and try to be champion again to fight Segura champion against champion for the fight could have more for they could sell it better for here in Puerto Rico and whichever place that it could have more money for both of us.
Now that he won, okay, and he's got the title, and you got to admit now the cards are a little bit more in the favor in his hands, where before the fight, it was in your hands. You were able to say it could be, hey, come and fight me in Puerto Rico. What if he's more in the climb of saying, no, I don't want to fight in Puerto Rico this time. Let's now do it in my grounds. Come to California. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, sure. Remember, right now, I go watch everywhere to fight. But like I say, I know if they're going to tell them in California, they're going to pay and make a believe $60,000 in Puerto Rico, they're going to put him $100,000. I believe this is business. I believe he will come back to Puerto Rico and defend his title because, like he say, hello. If I beat him the first time, I could beat him the second time. Hello? Hello?
Do you feel, can you hear me? Is it all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Because you're a master boxer. I mean, you were on the verge of making history there. What do you think that you could do different? Is it a matter of making it not such an exciting fight and kind of just moving and picking your spots? Was there certain things that you said you watched the tape. Was there anything specific that jumped out to you, or is it just a matter of, like, you know, just be more Calderon next time?
Yeah, I think it's more being more Calderon, and next time just moving a little bit, put a few rounds excited, and then keep on doing round by round and give a little bit an action in a few rounds, and just doing what I know how to do, move around, outbox them and beat them easily.
How has it been in Puerto Rico since the fight? How did the people receive you afterwards?
I believe they just like you. They can't believe the kind of fight that I did. They so excited. Even though it don't matter, I lost. They just say, you lost, but you did the best fight of your life. We never saw you fight the way you fought, and you fight like a real warrior. So we always going to be with you. Even if you're not the champ, you're always going to be our champion. You know, I still got the people responding. They still call me in the street. You are champ. You still are champ. You know, they still love me. They're the same champ I was before losing with Segura.
So that's kind of ironic. It's like finally, you know, you get the notice for being an exciting fighter, but you come out with the
Getting a loss. Yeah. Now the people love you. Because I gave them the fight they always wanted to see, a war fight.
That's like the final entry. That's just not fair, man. I've followed your career for a very long time, and I really enjoy watching you fight, and I enjoy watching you fight your fight. I don't care what anybody says. You don't need power to be exciting, man. But that's great that they accepted you. You know, I really, you know, that gives me hope that the content are good.
Yeah, sometimes I understand that for me, I remember that I learned that getting a loss is like getting a win. Right now, this loss for me is like a win, because now people want to fight with me. First, they don't want to fight with me. Then I didn't have nobody to fight with me. Then it was so hard to get fights. Now people want to fight with me, and now it's more easy to do business. Right now with me, you know, a loss is a loss, but it's a loss that people saw that I lost fighting, that I lost like a warrior, that I didn't lost, you know, running around just, and then they wanted to fight, you know. For me, this is like a win for me.
Yeah, so you don't seem bummed out at all. Like, I kind of expect you to be down.
I'm all right.
But for you,
I feel like if they give me another fight tomorrow, I feel like, if nothing happens, I'm just coming back, being like a challenger, and try to get my belt for the first time again, like the same energy that I had when I turned pro the first time.
So in a way, it's kind of like reignited that fire for you. It kind of made you a little hungrier again.
Yeah. Like I told my fans, I say, you got to think about what I did before losing. Seven and a half years like a champion, 18 defense. You know, I did a lot. God got me here with all this fights. And, you know, the loss came, but I did history here in Puerto Rico. I was the fighter that most years had like a champion, the fighter who had the most defending of titles. You know, I did a lot of things before getting my first loss.
You're a Hall of Famer, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, you sure did. You sure did, you know. And you have Tito Trinidad there, and you had Juanma Lopez, and I'm not sure if Gabe will answer this question, but what did they have to say after? Because, I mean, you definitely held the Puerto Rican country and flag close to your heart in that fight. I mean, everybody in Puerto Rico has just got to be proud. I mean, because watching that fight, man, I mean, I had you picked to win that fight, and the way you fought and the way you looked there in the ring. Still had me. I still had a smile, you know, giving my money up, you know, because I placed a bet on it, you know, because you gave that good of a fight.
Yeah, but in Puerto Rico, you know, the Tito yesterday, it was for me. We was lunching with the government and everything, and he felt so glad. He said, "I almost got in the rain trying to scream at you to do your fight and everything, but you fall like a warrior." He said, "You fall like a warrior," and I understand. How you feel when you got that punch, because I'm a boxer and I know how that feels. and you say you did the correct thing. You stay there and wait and don't get more hurt. You know, that he will spare me what I did that in that fight.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. I think there was people kind of freaking out, but those are probably people that have never been punched in the stomach by a professional fighter.
Yeah.
There's really nothing. There's nothing you can do, man. Your legs go, and you just.
Ask Oscar De La Hoya. Ask Oscar De La Hoya. He will actually will answer that question too with Bernard Hopkins.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
You go back to the future. You go back, real back, and you're gonna ask a lot of people who lost by body shot, and they're gonna explain you the same way I'm explaining you. When you get hit, you don't got no strength. You don't everything like freeze, and you don't got no like how to stand up and keep on fighting. It's so hard, so difficult to keep on when you got that pain right there in your stomach with no air. You know.
It's a huge difference. People don't really get it. Like you can get hit in the head and get knocked out, but. Or
yeah,
if you have a good,
like,
you can be able to withstand it. But there's really nothing you can do about the body. You can just do a bunch of sit-ups and hope for the best.
Yeah, that's what I tell a lot of people. I think it's better getting knocked out in your face that you just fall down, and when you wake up, you're already in your room. You don't even know what happened. But when you got a body shot, you right there looking at your opponent coming up to you. You can't do nothing with no air. You know, it's so difficult to, you know, have somebody on top of you and you can't defend yourself because you don't got no strength or no air. It's so difficult to play around with that pain.
It's not like you got outboxed and blown out. It was a hell of a fight. To me, I agree with you, Dave. I think it's fight of the year right now. And it was just a hell of a performance, man. And I'm sorry you didn't come out on the winning end of it, but I know you'll be back. And like I said, you're a Hall of Famer and you're a champion, whether you lost or not. And it's an honor to speak with you and to have you on the show.
Thanks, Aaron. Remember, y'all will see me back, and y'all will see me back like a champion, and I'm going to come back and do history.
All right, brother.
I can't wait.
Exactly. You know, hey, Ivan, thanks again, brother, for calling in and speaking to us. You know, I know, you know, after a fight like that, you want to probably go on vacation and rest and stuff, but, you know, the people did want to hear from you and how you're doing and stuff. So thank you very much again for being on.
All right, I want to thank the people to always always being there with me, and I just wanted them to hear me that I'm all right, I feel good, I still got energy, and a loss is a loss. I still got the spirit like a champion, I'm still happy. The best thing, I'm good, and I'm happy with my family, and at least I could talk right, and I'm not hurt like other boxers are.
I agree with you all the way, brother. You know, like I said, thank you again, man. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
All
right, man. Bye.
Take care, campeón.
You know, man, I mean, you know, just hearing them talk and talk about that fight and, you know, really honestly, just giving the honest truth about what happened that night. You gotta give it to them, you know, and that's what you call a guy that doesn't hold back in the ring and doesn't hold back in the interview by saying, hey, this is what happened, you know, no excuses, you know, he got the better of me, but I'm not going to, it's a blemish on my record, but it's not going to shine me away. It's still trying to make history out there. I'm going to continue doing my job. I'm going to continue to show that I got heart in the ring, and I'm going to continue showing people that just because I got 6 KOs on my record doesn't mean I can be a major bang in the sport of boxing. And that right there alone, when you hear a guy talk like that, you got to give him his due and his respect, because and I'm not just saying this because, like I said, I picked him to win the fight with Segura, but I'm just giving him his respect because as a warrior, he took a fight he didn't have to take. He took a risk out there he really didn't need to do, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, yeah. What are you going to do? You know, the guy. You really look at the fight, and I've seen it like a couple times now, and Segura just keeps throwing to the body. He ignores the head, and he just keeps throwing to the body. And that's what he invested in, and it paid off. And what are you going to do with a guy that can take your punch while he's going to the body, you're hitting him in the face, and he can deal with it, and he just keeps digging to your body? I mean, eventually he's going to get you, you know, and he's going to get you out of there, is what happened. And I think, you know, it's very possible that Calderon can come back and box the night of his life. I'm not sure about the legs, if they're still there, but I think it's very possible that he could do it, and we get three good fights out of this, as opposed to just one. And that's a beautiful thing for boxing. Did you get dropped again?
No, I'm here, brother. I had a patch in Irving stuff, you know. And,
with this long, long pause. I was like, wow. either I made a hell of a point, and he's just ruminating on it. Or he's like microwaving something. I just think, you know, we're going to get something great, and that's what happens with champions, you know. And to me, it's like I said, you know, more great fights, more often, man. And hopefully we get this. I mean, there's a rumor. I actually can't talk about it. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten permission from the manager, but I've heard possibly Segura actually might end up on the Pacquiao Margarito undercard, fighting another fighter. I can't mention their name, but I'll find out from his manager if I can mention the name, so I won't bug you. But you know, he's going to come back pretty fast. He didn't take a lot of damage, and Segura's already back in the gym. He's not sparring until he knows who he fights, but he's already training. So, Dave, I need to patch in Angelo Dundee. So I'm going to give him a call to give him a heads up and then bring him onto the show. Okay, now they're gone. Now it's just me on the show. So I'm not actually going to disappear and call Angelo Dundee. I'm just going to sit here and talk about fights. Another fight that's being talked about right now is Jean Pascal versus Bernard Hopkins. And I'm curious how fight fans actually think about that fight because I'm not excited to see Bernard Hopkins fight ever again, to be quite honest. After the Roy Jones debacle, I don't want to see him get in there. And to be fair to him, too, I don't want to see him old to the point where some dude beats his ass and knocks him out and hurts him. At 46, that's pretty dangerous for a guy to get knocked out. It's, you know, dangerous at any age. But I don't think it's going to be exciting. I mean, it's a good payday probably for both guys, but it's a good payday for them. Bad night at the fights for us. That's how I look at it.
I don't know. Some people are going to say that Bernard still got something left in the tank, you know. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence on that one with you. You know, I can understand where you're coming from, but it does have curiosity of can he pull it off again? It goes back to where he's never done very well with guys that have fast hands and youth. You know, he does well against guys that may have youth but have slow hands or have fast hands but are just old. You know, and that's one of them kind of fights if you're kind of want to find out, you know. Now, Pascal, a lot of people, you know, have said he's a poor man version of Roy Jones Jr. I don't see it. But then again, you know, I've heard that about Sergio Martinez. You know, I think what more people are talking about or inclining about is that the awkwardness and they do have speed. But is it going to be enough? Is he going to be awkward enough or have enough speed to keep Bernard from holding him and fighting him in the inside and tying him up? We've seen Pascal kind of be in front of you, where he's not that elusive. You know, he can be hit, and his shots are a little awkward. But to me, it looks like it can kind of tie up with Bernard Hopkins' style of fighting. You know, is it intriguing? It's just intriguing to see if the old man can still do it without the cane or the wheelchair. But is it worth the risk for a Pascal? When there's other fights, he can have another Chad Dawson rematch, you know. He could, you know, obviously, go down in weight. Instead, if he wants to risk losing to Bernard Hopkins, I don't know. But it might be a major payday for him, and that would be the persuasion for Pascal to do it. Now, Bernard Hopkins is not the easiest man to negotiate with, you know. I'm wondering if, you know, B-Hop's going to be willing to go to Canada where they would sell out the arena, you know. I mean, it'd be a major big thing out there, but I just can't see that happening, you know.
Well, I just think if Hopkins wins, right, what kind of fight is it going to be? It's going to be a hold and hit, one shot at a time, kind of, not very exciting fight to watch, whereas, you know, if Pascal wins, then yeah, I mean, it could be exciting. He's going to be, you know, kind of hit and run. He is kind of, to me, a bit of a poor man's Roy Jones. Not really. I mean, he's kind of just like a more hyper-athletic, like Jermaine Taylor almost. He's kind of a basic right. dude. Doesn't throw all the punches. You know, he throws a good, nice 1-2, decent jab. To me, I don't really find him all that particularly exciting either. I mean, he's okay. You know, that Dawson fight was kind of boring mainly because of Dawson. But I just don't think that's good chemistry. It's anymore, like we're getting back to the original, the kind of the spine of our show, which is the networks don't know what the hell they're doing. They're not good matchmakers. They like names. You know, Pascal versus Hopkins is, I guess, two good names, but they're not thinking about the matchmaking. And to me, the matchmaking makes for a really crappy fight. And that, you know, it's going to be on a big stage. A lot of people are going to watch, and it's not going to be very exciting. And I think we've got to err on the side of exciting, you know, a lot of these times. I mean, good for him. He's going to get a good payday. You know, can't knock a guy, can't knock the hustle, but not really that excited about seeing it. I'm going to call Angelo Dundee. I'm going to bring him in. So I'm going to disappear for 1 second.
Go right ahead and stuff, you know. And if you guys want to call right now and chop it up some boxing, you can call in 347-215-7598. You know, the whole Pascal, not Hopkins, you know, seeing it set in December. Yeah, but I don't know, man. I mean, like I said, it's just one of those things. Now, you know, we talk about we're tired of hearing, you know, seeing bad fights and stuff, but this is one of those things is, you know, what do you think? You think it's a bad fight? You think it's a good fight? I don't think it's a great fight. I mean, it's one of those fights that should not be on pay-per-view. But like Gabriel's saying right now, it's going to be over the stage in Canada. There's going to be a lot of people to come out to see Pascal and even to get a chance to watch a legend like Bernard Hopkins go at it. So you know that the promoters are definitely going to, you know, feed off to that. So what can you do?
Dave? I'm here with the esteemed Mr. Angelo Dundee. I'd like to welcome him to the show. You're on with myself, Gabriel Montoya, and Mr. David Duenas.
Beautiful. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for coming on.
I understand that you're involved in the reopening of the famed Fifth Street Gym. Could you tell us a little bit about how this has come about and everything that's going on with it?
Well, you know, I got a call from some nice people. They said, would you mind if we put up a Fifth Street Gym? I said, please, because it never should have left, you know. And when I had the Fifth Street Gym, Chris and I, and the guy asked the guy to keep it up. I says, what do you want for the building? He said, $2 million. So I went out and bought a gun, and I couldn't do it. So it was all, you know, wood and termites were doing a good job on it. But now this gym is beautiful. It's on the same location. It's right next to a bank. So if we got to make a loan, we could do that. But I'm looking forward to it because Fifth Street Gym was synonymous with Miami Beach. And they went hand in hand. And we had such a great time. So many great people went through it. And it's going to bring back a lot of fond memories, and I think a lot of people are going to be happy it's going to be there.
Back in the day in that gym, I mean, it was a who's who. Everybody, every fighter from top to bottom, from Robinson to Lewis to Ali, would go there. I think that's where the famous Beatles pictures were taken with Muhammad Ali. What are some of your fondest memories of the original Fifth Street Gym?
Well, the fondest memory was, see, I was a kid that was educated in New York by all the great trainers there. And, you know, the Ray Arcells, the Charlie Goldmans, Chicky Ferrara, Teddy Bentham, you name them, they were there because it was the mecca of boxing. And these guys took me under their wing, and I watched them work and operated with them. I was a bucket boy for all those guys. And then when I came to Miami Beach, I was able to put the education these guys gave me to work with working with fighters. And, you know, I started making little puddle jumps like those to Argentina and places like that, South America. And, you know, me being from an Italian extraction, I picked up the Spanish pretty easy. It's comparable. Mm-hmm. And, hey, they used to call me the Italiano Cubano when I used to go to Cuba. I had a ball. Well, I know I talked with a Dago accent, Spanish. You know, and then when I got all the Cuban fighters, the Spanish was good, because I learned it right on the streets of Cuba. So, you know, I've had some great fond memories, and it all was predicated with the Fifth Street Gym.
What do you think it takes? I mean, obviously it probably takes great fighters and some love and care, but in your opinion, what does it take to start a gym and to have it flourish like that? What made the Fifth Street Gym become the mecca of boxing?
Well, you know, all the snowbirds used to come down there. So, and if you liked the sweat, it was very easy because there was no air conditioning in the Fifth Street Gym. All we did was open the windows. And Muhammad loved the sweat, see? And I think that what it does, the cleans you out pretty good. You don't have to work that hard to get a sweat up.
What do you think is the problem nowadays with these fighters now, Angelo? I mean, it doesn't seem like they have the same ethnic or workmanship that the fighters of the past, you know, fighters that you were training.
Well, you know, you can't compare, because you got to remember there's so many other things for these kids to do. And to be a fighter, you got to be really wanted. Because you're not going to get a rich, quick scene. It takes a lot of hard work. And we were very fortunate, you know, with the Olympics. You know, look at the kids that came out of the Olympics. And I think it's going to get better, because I think our amateur program is improving. So, you know, from the amateurs is where we get the pros. And, you know, we had such a luxury of a Howard Cosell letting the fans know who these guys were. So when they came out of the amateurs, they were into the professional ranks. The fans knew them. So we don't have that right now, but I think it's coming around, because I worked with a kid in Fairfax, Virginia, by the name of Jimmy Lang. And every time the kid fights there, he draws like 3,000 or 4,000 people. So I think if we can get the Jimmy Lang-type individual in the town, the fans know him. See, today we don't have no the recognition of the fighters. And if you don't speak Russian, you're in trouble.
That's true. Right. I mean, why do you think the amateur program has gone away in the United States? It seems like
the kids, you got to have, first of all, you got to get the kids. And where you have the good kids, like I was in Canada for about 3 months when doing the movie with Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe. They have an excellent amateur program there, and we're going to get some good fighters out of there. But see, it's what you need. You need the nucleus. You know, we don't have no college boxing anymore. But all we got to get these kids that see what's happening right now, though, is a gentleman down in Hollywood at the Hard Rock. Name is Charles, and he's getting kids that didn't make it in football, kids that didn't make it in basketball, and he's trying to make them fighters. Now, this might be a heck of an idea, because the big guy, they're athletic, they're big, and this is what we need. So I think there's innovations coming around. And listen, with the Fifth Street Gym, who knows who could walk in, and I'm always available. The legs may be a little sharp, but the mind's all right.
Well, I think we got Tom on the line with us. Tom, are you there?
I am here, enjoying
doing?
Angelo. I'm doing
God
great listening to Angelo. I'm just like when they said with Dean Martin was on, I'm like the guy with the brown shoes and a black tuxedo, full, you know, the room full with Angelo on.
Well, I'll tell you, when it was mentioned that we may do something with California. I was in California an awful lot, guys, and I was thrilled to be a best friend of Mickey Davies, thrilled that Parnassus adopted me. I've been all over with George and, you know, then Eileen Neaton. I met all the great people, and Mickey Davies was my best friend. And when the guy was, you know, had cancer, I made him take a ride to Paris with us with David Love. And, you know, Don Chargan, what can I say? Ron, I think, brought me out there to be a matchmaker for at the place there. I couldn't take the job because I had Jimmy Ellis in the process of winning a championship. So I had to turn it down. Also, I would have died if I came there with the smog because I got allergies. So, you know, I love L.A. And look at the great people you guys have got there, got at De La Jolla Bunch. They're so great people, and the Golden Boy Bunch. And they had me up there as an advisor. I hope I had advised a little better with the Pacquiao fight. Well, you know, those things happen. But I am so fond of L.A. You lucky suckers that got... You got Jackie Callan out there. You got, I've been out there the kid, Boom Boom Mancini brought me out there.
Oh, is that right?
I went there for a fight, and Boom Boom and I sat down and talked with the guy, you know, married with the children or something. He's such a great actor. That guy won.
Ed O'Neill.
I think he won an Emmy the other night with that The Modern Family. And he's such a great fight fan. He wanted to have dinner with me. See, the thing is that the people that are involved in showbiz, I always thought were attracted to boxing because of showbiz. You know, star quality. It's not true. Because when I started, luckily made some movies and had some fun, met some great people like Russell Crowe and a guy like Will Smith. I trained him for the Ali movie. And... They work harder than fighters. So this is the attraction because they see the effort these kids have put into being a fighter. And I've had a ball with a bunch of them. And look at Ron Howard. He tried to make me an actor. I loved it. You know, then Michael Mann says, hey, Ian, stick to your business. I said, well, I'll stick to my business. Okay. But that's boxing.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, being that I have you on the line, I wanted to ask you this question because a lot of times you see a lot of these kids that go in and they start wailing at the punching bag, you know, and I don't know if that's the good thing or the right thing to do in the beginning of them putting on a pair of gloves. Angelo, what is something that if a kid wants to get into the sport of boxing, what is one of the first things should they learn how to do before hitting the heavy bag?
Well, you gotta have patience. You gotta learn that your road work is very essential. You gotta get up early in the morning and do your road work. And see, actually, fighters don't have to run. They're not marathon guys. None of my kids ran more than 3 miles because you tune your legs up. You know, you gotta get to the gym. You gotta learn how to warm up. You can't hit the heavy bag right away because it's a mistake. You got to shake out first, get a sweat, skip a little rope. You know, you can get your own routine. It's nothing. It's not a tough thing because what the fighters got to do, see, going to the gym, it's like monotonous. So you got to learn how to beat boredom. And the guy that beat boredom was Muhammad. Going to the gym was like going to a party. And he always had fun doing it. And this is the key. You got to have fun with what you do. And I've been having a ball my whole life, and I'm still having fun.
Now, you know, going back, you were mentioning Oscar De La Hoya, the whole Golden Boy camp, and when they brought you in as an advisor when he was going to get in with Manny Pacquiao. Let me ask, is there too much information sometimes for fighters? I mean, can a fighter have too much direction where it ends up on fight night, make them not perform correctly? Is there a such thing as that?
Well, no, I think, see, when I was up at Bear Mountain, I watched Al De La Hoya work. I was amazed. He worked like a 21-year-old. And little bit, and the kid was 35. See, you can't work. And I hope I'd have got George Foreman to advise him. Because George Foreman know how to work an old body. And this was the success he had. And I had a thrill working with this guy. So, you know, you pick up an education from each place you go. De La Hoya should have beat Pacquiao. But, you know, these things, this is boxing. You have a winner, you have a loser. You can't put a hat on anything. You don't know. And this is the mystique of boxing. So, hey, every day you learn something new every day. And I learn something new every day.
Absolutely.
So, we have Tom Sadas on the line with you, Angelo, and the main reason we brought you guys on, although a little
bit... Tom must feel like I fought with Muhammad all those years. I never got a word in this one.
I
was a silent wonder.
Hey, what goes around comes around. Now it's my turn.
That's right, Tom. Go ahead.
If you want to talk about the reopening of the Fifth Street Gym, which is, you know, it's
I'm thrilled.
You know, returning to boxing. How did that come about? And tell us, you know, when it's going to reopen and what you guys have planned for that.
Sure. Basically,
go ahead, Tom.
Thanks, Ange. First of
I'm
all,
I'm taking a deep breath.
Okay. It's interesting because, you know, I've always been down in Miami. I've been there for a few years, been in boxing, you know, with Fred and some other guys. And I've become really good friends with Angelo's kind of protege, Matt Biamonte. And we've been looking for a gym for years, but there's a great kid by the name of Trevor Cedar who owned South Florida Boxing. And we never wanted to do anything like that because he's a good kid. Well, he wound up getting out of the business and doing some other things. So we called Angelo and Jimmy, his son, and you know, we went out there, met him. We told him what we wanted to do, and, you know, he gave us our blessing. So we have a direct linkage with Matt because he was with Angelo for years. And, you know, Dino and I, you know, I think we know we're doing at least, you know, one day a week or 2 days a week. And we found the original location where the gym was in. And, I mean, just spending time with Angelo and opening the Fifth Street Gym for me has given me a new life. I'm a big Muhammad Ali fan. I have the same birthday as him. Angelo's just, you know, I can't say enough. I can listen to his stories all day long. And Jimmy, his kid, is a great kid. And this has just been a blessing in disguise. And, I mean, I'm opening the most famous boxing gym in the world with the most famous trainer in the world who trained the most recognizable and best fighter of all time. I mean, who can't be thrilled to do that, you know? But we're going to have to create our own legacy. We're going to have to make our own name. But having a place like the Fifth Street Gym with such positive energy for us, I can't see how we can't do it. It's a great energy with Angelo and with everyone who was involved with the Fifth Street Gym. And people, you know, winning the boxing company and HBO, and people are coming out of the water with it. Just, they're bending over backwards to help us. And, you know, it's a dream come true for me. And just being on the phone with Angelo when I'm around him, he's just, there's nobody I've ever met like Angelo Dundee.
You guys are doing a big, you had talked about, I think the first time we talked about this, doing like a big gala event and having a bunch of people come out. Are you guys still working on that?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be September 23rd and 24th because it's just not, you know, one night's not going to be enough. And we have some people coming. You know, we promised them we wouldn't mention names, but, I mean, just expect anyone to show up that night. Of course, Angelo and the gang's going to be out there, and we're going to have, you know, a lot of boxers coming out. And, you know, we just promised I wouldn't mention any names, but there are definitely going to be some interesting people that night, so... whoever wants to come down and, you know, be part of it, that's great. Check out the gym, but it will be September 23rd. And, you know, God bless Rachel Charles, who's done a great job, you know, getting all these guys out there, CNN, Sports Illustrated, and you guys that have interest in the Fifth Street Gym by putting us on the show. And
so, Tom, the Hartmut Church has come from Frankfurt, Germany. He's a warrior man, and I've known him forever. In Germany, I've been there many times. In fact, I managed a kid with me from Germany named Ryan Hartman, and I met all these people. And in fact, the promoter out there just got inducted in the Hall of Fame. So I was with these guys, and God knows who. And we're going to have a lot of nice people showing up, Tom, you know, surprising us.
I can't wait. I'm actually hoping to make the trip out. I'm still kind of working that out, but really like to see the gym and just, you know, get a piece of a history like that. I understand you guys are doing a book unveiling about Muhammad Ali called The GOAT, and the tribute to Ali. Yeah, the greatest of all time. I can't wait to read it. Well, thank you, gentlemen. We have another guest coming on very soon, but I really appreciate it. It's truly, Angelo, first time I've ever had a chance to really talk with you, and it's truly an honor and a privilege.
Well, please, I'll take a return match anytime. God love you. And I love you. I love your punchline. Leave it in the ring. Maron, that's where you got to leave it.
Hey, that's exactly where you got to leave it. There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much.
God bless you. Tom, don't talk so much.
It took over.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, Ange.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Oh, man.
He is awesome. I love listening to that man.
He's hilarious, you know.
It's funny. That's just great. But it's also that I like history like that. I like hearing all those stories and a lot of those names. You know, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't. But they're all it's all part of our history and it's just I just get excited listening to guys like that. Just people that are a link to the past and the reason we're you and I are sitting here talking right now.
Exactly, and like I said, you guys want to call in 347-215-7598, go right ahead. The lines are open. Let's talk some boxing and stuff. And the funny thing is that I forgot that Angelo Dundee was the advisor for the fight of Oscar De La Hoya facing Manny Pacquiao, I remember watching that on 24/7, when they were having the 24/7 series, and I had thought, I was like, Angelo Dundee. I go, we have Nacho Bernstein, have Angelo Dundee. I thought there was just a little bit too much there for Oscar De La Hoya. I was like, it could be overcrowded. It's like, who do you listen to? Because Dundee's going to have his say, and Bernstein's going to have his, and you're going to have two imposing personalities there. So which one – it's a tug of war. Which one do you listen to? Which one is going to be the more effective? And when you get in the ring, to me, it seems like that could be – a spell for destruction sometimes for an unexperienced fighter. But it did, I don't think it had anything to do with Oscar losing to Manny Pacquiao in this particular case and stuff because we saw that fight. We saw the outcome of what really was going on there. But I just thought that was kind of a little much. I don't know. I'll just bring it up.
The best way to make me not be rude and aggressive and ask us questions is just roll out Angelo Dundee because it was like he started talking about that advisor thing and I was like to me what I heard about that camp was that Oscar just didn't play and work very hard and it you could have had Sugar Ray Robinson and Muhammad Ali show up and it'd be advising him and it wasn't going to help if he didn't want to do the work that's what I was told that the late Edwin Valero was the one that gave him that black eye they kicked him out of camp or fired him for it. Victor Ortiz left that camp. You had two very good southpaws to work with. You didn't work with those. Instead, you worked with these other guys that weren't on that level. When they did their running, Oscar was apparently always way in the back, way down the hill as everybody else was running at a real fighter pace. He was running at an old man's pace, is what Valero said. So, to me, it's like, you can have Angelo Dundee there, who's a wealth of knowledge, but you had Nacho Beristain, too. It's like, basically the full encyclopedia of boxing at your disposal. Doesn't do any good if you don't want to do your road work.
Exactly. Absolutely. And let's patch in some fight fans really quick and let's see what they got to say. Let's patch in Richard. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind?
What's going on, brother?
Just trying to find out the scoop what's going on with boxing today.
The scoop was going on in boxing. There's a lot of stuff going on in boxing, brother. Did you have a chance to watch the Calderon and Suiga fight?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it.
Man, we're going to have to hook you up with a link, brother. We're going to have to hook you up with a link to watch that.
Well, you the man. You the man.
check out sweetboxing.com. You can find a copy there.
Sweetboxing.com.
Okay.
But other than that, man, what's going on, man? Anything in particular you want to talk about? Any fights coming up? Or you got a rant, you got something to say, what's cracking in boxing you're disappointed about? Or you want to applaud what's going on in something in boxing at the moment?
Well, I'm really just, disappointed about the Pacquiao and Mayweather fight. Is it going to happen or what's the holdup? I haven't heard too much about that.
Well, I was gonna talk a little bit about this, and we just had a chance because things are just rolling and going and on the show in the beginning. But, one of the guys I talked to, one of our listeners, and a guy I had a chance to speak to on the phone about this. But, Pretty Boy Floyd Mayweather is starting up his Ustream, okay? And what he's doing is kind of giving you the inside look of of his living, you know, showing you he's got M&Ms in a jar. He's got, you know, gummy bears in another jar, and, you know, and but I ain't going to complain about his assistant. I don't know if you had a chance to see his assistant. God damn it. But going back really quick, you know, he's having fans. He said, hey, put your number down. And I applaud him for doing this, you know, because I was like, man, Floyd, you're crazy for doing this. All these numbers being thrown out on the Twitter, on the Facebook of you know, him saying, hey, give me your number. I'll give you a call. You can ask me whatever you want. I thought that was just bravery to his fans. You know what I mean? He was giving back something back to his fans. But
sure.
Caesar from ATL Boxing got on there. Hey, shot him over his number, and Floyd called him back, and Caesar didn't hold any punches. He said, hey, are you ever going to fight Manny Pacquiao? And there's a little bit more to that conversation. You know, I just can't remember the whole thing and stuff, you know. And if Caesar, you're listening, you can call in. Let us know, man, if I'm wrong the way I'm breaking down the story, okay? Because if I'm exaggerating or what, I don't know. But this is what I remember. And I did have a chance to go back and look at that Ustream, because you can check it out on his Twitter. If you go back to his Twitter, he's got the Mayweather money Ustream and stuff. But so when Caesar goes, hey, you're going to fight Manny Pacquiao, he looks at the camera and he goes, well, I'm going to tell everybody. He said, I fought 41 people, right, and I'm undefeated. If he fights one more fight, people are gonna say, okay, you fought one fight. They don't even remember the 41 other fights. And you got to remember, this is the Floyd Mayweather world, and this is what he's thinking, okay? And he said, he goes, I could fight four or five bums and make millions. So why are you going to hate on my game? So what is that? What is he telling you there? Then he goes back on Ustream and he starts saying, you know, calling Manny Pacquiao Puchiao and a midget and, you know, I'm going to fight you and all that. But he doesn't give you a direct when he's going to do it. But my whole thing is here is he basically told, if you're a fan of him and you support him, okay, and I got nothing, you know, against him, you know, I'm pretty sure he's a great guy, you know, off camera, and you know, and I love his style of fighting, but I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say, oh, I'm a big Floyd Mayweather fan, because I'm really not. You know, I'm not really a fan of any really, honestly, I like fighters that fight. That's my thing, you know. And Floyd, I mean, you know, he's just pretty much kind of telling you, listen, you keep paying, I'll keep doing. Don't bitch and complain about it. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of took off of it. By him telling us, I can fight four more people, no names, and you're still going to come out and you're still going to pay for it. So guess what? You're going to get it when I'm done and ready to give it to you. And that is kind of really, honestly, it's our fault in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? True. And I've said this a time before. It's like when you got a pretty old lady, okay, and you're buying the bitch everything that she wants every time she asks for it, okay? You know what I mean? And eventually one day you decide to put your foot down and say, no, I ain't buying you that. And then she locks up her legs. Then now she's dictating the whole thing in front of you. And that's what pretty much what Floyd has done to us. He locked his legs. He said, no, I'm not giving you what you want. I haven't been doing it for a long time. Why do I need to give it to you now?
He locked his legs, man.
He locked them legs, man.
Well, you look at it like this. It's, you know, Manny Pacquiao, everybody's dogging him for fighting Margarito. You know, but the bottom line is this, is that the guy fights. You know, he cares about you actually getting in the ring and doing it. And he's in a tough fight. I don't care what anybody says about this fight. Margarito's a tough matchup for him. If you hate it or, you know, you don't hate it, it's a tough matchup. Floyd is doing a free Ustream channel, which I guess is giving back to the fans. I mean, if you go on there and you give them your phone number, you'll get a call from Floyd Mayweather, which, I don't know, you know, it's funny that a lot of the same people that are sitting there on Twitter complaining about Floyd and screw him, we don't want to talk about him and this and that, and the minute he goes on Ustream, they're like, it's like the Beatles just landed, you know, in the U.S., you got a bunch of screaming girls, Floyd, call me. I mean, I would never put my phone number on Twitter and let people know what it is just so I could get Floyd Mayweather to call me. Are you kidding me? I mean, but they're all like a bunch of little teenage girls throwing their panties at it. And to me, they're part of the problem. You know, this guy doesn't care about your sport, folks. He cares about himself. And, you know, I'm not knocking the hustle. You can do that. You're making tons of money only caring about yourself. But
I'm sorry, I will never refer to that guy, and I will never allow him to refer to himself in my presence as the face of boxing. He's the face of Floyd Mayweather. That's about it. You know, he doesn't give a shit about my sport. He doesn't do anything to move my sport forward. He doesn't give us the fights that we want. He doesn't fight very often. So, really, to me, he's Oscar De La Hoya 2.0 in the last years of his career. But the difference is, Oscar went through a period where he fought all his contemporaries. Floyd has not gone through that period. I'm sorry.
Right.
The welterweight is a pathetic run. Pathetic. I mean, Andre Berto has one less good name at welterweight than Floyd Mayweather does, and he arguably has the worst welterweight reign of all time. So that's what I think of Floyd at this day and age. He's a Hall of Famer for what he did 10 years ago, but what have you done for me lately? Nothing.
Yeah.
So
who's
my take
who's
on
left? Floyd. Who's left in that division for him to fight?
You got Pacquiao. You've got guys from 140 that might move up eventually. You've got Berto. You've got Paul Williams, all ready to go and fight him. But now both those guys are advised by the same guy that Floyd's advised by, so they're never going to fight. But that division isn't, you know, as empty as people would have it, you know, have them say it is. You know, Floyd can fight at 154. Floyd's never going to fight a dangerous fight. So to me, it's like if you want to ask me about boxing, I'll talk to you about boxing, and we're talking about the sport of boxing. If you ask me about Floyd, you're asking me about a completely separate league that doesn't exist in the world of boxing as I know it.
Right.
If that makes any sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I could match him. I could match him up with a bunch of fighters, but he ain't going to fight any of those people. You know? I mean, if I got maybe 10 fights and a following, he might fight me if he could make some good money because he knows he'll beat me. But, you know, that's about it. That's kind of what I think of Floyd. Is he a genius in the ring? Absolutely. Is he a Hall of Famer for what he did at 135 pounds and below? Absolutely. What has he done for me lately? Not much.
Right.
Wow. I thought a little bit.
You know what? Let me patch in Caesar really quick, and he could tell us exactly what happened. Caesar, you there, brother?
Yeah, man, I'm here.
How you doing, man? So,
Gabe, you still haven't called me, man.
I know, man. I'm sorry, brother. I've been, you know, my dad's really ill, you know, just to let people know, because a lot of folks too have hit me up and say, hey, Dave, what's up, man? Like, I've got on Facebook, and they'll say, hey, are you there? And I'm trying to, you know, conversate with everybody, get everybody back. But my dad has been in the hospital, and I've been in and out. I was supposed to go down to L.A. I was supposed to go down to see Brandon Gonzalez in Nevada. I didn't have a chance to, so, you know. But the old man is still running strong. He's just trying to get him back in his feet and stuff. And I already told him, too, hey, man, you're going to miss out on a lot of stuff and all that. I was scaring everybody getting sick and shit. You know, come on, get back to it. Get back to it. Anyway, Caesar, so what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. Just calling to let you know, basically verifying what you said on the air. Yeah, you know, I was able to get with Floyd Mayweather, and I think Gabe and I got into it on Twitter for a little bit, but, you know, I still love Gabe, and I respect him very much for his opinion, his writing. Like I said, you know, Gabe, you still haven't called me back. But anyway, the main thing...
Did you give me your phone number or something?
Yeah, man, I threw it out there. Remember, it was the little argument was like, he called me back and you still haven't called me?
I'm sorry. I apologize, Caesar. I will give you a call.
whatever.
That's what Floyd did.
Yeah. Here's the deal, man. What happened was, you know, like you said, he was on Ustream. He showed, you know, toured everybody his house and everything. And then he said, you know, if you put your number on the chat room right now, I will call you. And I have been trying to reach this cat every which way I can and have hit a brick wall every way. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put it out there. So I put it out there, and a couple of my friends that were on there, they put my phone number up there, and he called me. And just for the record, he called about 300-something people that night. And, I give him props for saying what he was going to say, which is he said, you put your number out there, I will call you. So, you know, he gave me a call, and my question was exactly that. It was like, look, there's a lot of rumors going around about your career, about you fighting in Dubai, or, you know, you're taking a year off. I want to know, you know, what Floyd Mayweather has to say about a possible fight, or when are you going to fight Manny Pacquiao? And he basically, you know, that's when he turned to the camera, and he said, look, this is the way it is. I fought 41 people, and everybody says I fought a whole bunch of nobodies, hand-picked opponents. He's like, one more, and what are people going to say? Oh, he fought 41 people and just one person. He's like,
that's bullshit.
You know, and I was like, wow, man, okay. I'm like, okay. And then the thing that really surprised me was when he said, he's like, if I fight hand-picked opponents, or as they call them, bumps, and get paid $25 or $35 million, I'm going to milk it that way. He's like, because at the end of the day, I'm going to walk away with my money, I'm going to walk away with all my faculties, and my family's going to be happy. You know, that's,
wow,
that's what he said. And for that, if that's his mentality, you know, I'm like, wow, man. Well, at least you said it. You know, you put it out there.
Well, but it's weird because it's like he's the one that left Bob Arum to take control of his career and to have control over who he fights, right? But now, mm-hmm, he's kind of flipping the script and saying, well, you guys say that I do this. No, you do that. That's what you do. You've created that culture. You've created that reality. And then you're kind of getting mad at us for blaming you for it. I'm glad he at least came out and just said it. Like, look, I'm just doing this for the money. I ain't going to fight anybody that's dangerous. You guys won't give me credit anyways. And that's not true. You know, I don't think I've ever written more positively about Floyd Mayweather until after that Mayweather, or the Mosley fight. That was some of the most positive writing I've ever written about him. I called him a master, a genius. I told that to his face. I said, you're truly an artist, you know. And he repays us by not giving us the fight that we need, that we want.
You know,
and I don't subscribe to the idea that one fight's going to save boxing. But shit, it wouldn't hurt, would it?
No, not at all. You know, it wouldn't hurt at all. My thing with Floyd is, you know, coming up through the ranks as far as all the weight divisions he jumped up, he fought the people that were champions at that time. Whether they be quality champions or not, well, that's debatable. But he fought everybody on those divisions coming up to the weight where he is now. It's like you said, once he left Arum and went on his own, he basically got his hand-picked opponents. And in boxing, you're only as good as you are in your last performance, and nobody will remember what you did unless you fight somebody.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. You know,
definitely.
Like,
I agree.
You can't really, even if he loses, you kind of go, I think there'll be a lot of people that go, see, he was a fraud. And to me, that's just not how I roll. You know, to me, it's just, I want to see a really good fight between, like, I look at Pacquiao versus Mayweather like the fight that I, or the game I wanted to see, which was my Rams, when they're at the height of their powers against the Ravens, when they were at the height of their defensive powers. You know, best offense, best defense, let's see who wins. And that's, to me, what this fight is that it's got the best kind of defensive, kind of all-around fighter in Floyd against an offensive juggernaut in Pacquiao. Let's put them together. Let's see what happens. That's what should happen. But to me, it's just ego. It's biding his time. It's not really caring about the sport, but caring about himself. I can't knock the hustle, but I don't have to watch it either.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but like I said, I give him props for, you know, calling everybody he said he was going to call, and that's just me. But as far as his comments, go ahead.
If I would have come on there and identified who I was and given my number, he would
have
called.
probably not.
I know we got our other co-host Ernie and all that. We've had some problems with Skype. I don't know what the hell's wrong with Skype, man. It just keeps dropping. As we come on, it drops us. So I got my phone on the side for backup. Ernie, you there, brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
Ebert.
Well, all righty, guys. I got a roll, man. So I'll keep listening to you guys, and hey, I'll probably call next week.
All right, brother.
We're not supposed to be talking about Floyd anymore. I thought we were done with this guy.
Yeah, I actually thought so, too. I thought we were just talking.
Well, I'll say this. To kind of add on a little bit to Gabe, you know what? The way I see it is this. Because, you know, everybody knows on this, I am a genuine Floyd fan. I've made no bones about it. I'll say it to anybody, including Steve Kim, Doug Fisher, all the people who are notorious in hating Floyd. Way back when he was rumored to have fought De La Hoya, this is the first fight when it was supposed to go on, he made a choice, and I think consciously he made a choice that he was going to go after the biggest fight. I understood that from a fan's point of view. I may not have liked it. I may have wanted him in my heart of hearts to face the Margaritos at the time, but I understood that as a fan, and I know that what he was angling for is what he's still doing right now, which is grabbing the biggest task with the least amount of risk. I understood that. I understood why he took on a Baldomir versus a Margarito. because he's still getting the same amount, and he knew that Baldomir was the smaller threat of the two. At this point, though, I'll be honest with you, it's a little old. From a Floyd fan standpoint, it's old. I understand, if you can make money off of this, you're going to. This is a business. We all want to make some type of money, even us. But at some point, our jobs are different than yours in that now that you have so much money, you're at such a income level that, you don't need to do that anymore. What you need to do is go out there and be the star that we expect you to be. And when it gets to that point where you've become something of a caricature of yourself, which Floyd has now become, then people are really going to actually start turning off. And it hasn't happened so far. But I really truly think that Floyd's 15 and a half minutes, because it's been pretty sustained, is about at its apex, if not it's waning a little bit. And I think a lot of this has to do with the antics. I do think that the Mosley fight was indeed a step up, but I'd love to see him capitalize on that. Will he? No. He's probably going to take the rest of the year off. In fact, I would guarantee he's taking the rest of the year off. In fact, I would venture to say that he probably won't even approach a fight until May.
Yeah.
And that's sad to see. And it's really sad to see from a guy whose potential screams of all-time status, but yet whose approach to it is what's wrong with boxing today. It's what's wrong kind of in a lot of ways with society. Everybody's in for themselves and not for the legacy you leave.
Let me ask you this, Ernie.
Yeah.
What's the difference, do you think? And Dave, too, Oscar basically did the same thing for the last few years of his career. Kind of, he took a long time off and he'd come back with a big event like once or twice a year. Why did it take them so long to get turned off to what Oscar was doing? People still bought, they were picking him to beat Pacquiao.
Oh, yeah.
Why is it that they're becoming turned off to Floyd at this point?
I'll tell you why. I think people are quicker to turn off to Floyd because of his mouth. Oscar really never had a mouth. I mean, he would. I mean, when Vargas would go out there and talk about it, about him,
mm-hmm.
he never really fired back. I mean, even when Margarito was calling him, take off your fishnets and fight me, he really didn't respond back. It's one of those things where it's not Oscar's nature to really talk a lot of shit, in the public forum. With Floyd, you're gonna get what's on his mind, and he's gonna say it whether it's verbal diarrhea or not. Or whether it's just truly heartfelt, it turns off a lot of people. To some of his diehard fans, it's exactly what you expect from him, and you appreciate, in a almost a perverse way. You understand, okay, this is how he is, and I get that, and I'm fine with that. But for the most part, people get turned off by that.
Absolutely.
And think a little bit, just a slight thing, maybe the color of his skin too. I mean. We like our warriors to be brown skinned or fighting out of either Los Mochis or Cebu City. We don't know how to react to a guy from Grand Rapids, Michigan, maybe a little bit, now. Whereas back then in the 70s and 80s, most of our boxing icons were of American nature.
You might be right about that. Yeah, because, if you remember back when Muhammad Ali and Jack Johnson did a lot of talking, it was really frowned upon and stuff, I want to let some fight fans on really quick, guys, if you guys want to call in, too.
I'm sorry, that opened up thoughts. Because Sugar Ray Leonard was a nice guy, and everybody loved that guy.
Yeah,
everybody
Durant was a villain.
Yeah. We need a hero, not a villain.
We had that a little bit with Jermaine Taylor, and people shitted on him when he was around.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, granted, he had a lot of controversial fights or close decisions, but before him, no one could even touch Bernard Hopkins, and it was relatively competitive. We had a hero in Jermaine Taylor, and people shat on him.
That's very true.
I don't know.
But society just doesn't like good, nice people, man. Unfortunately, that's just the way.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Dave. Not anymore. They don't like the nice guys.
You go to the movies, you more or less root for the bad guy. You know what I mean? Let me patch in one of the bad guys in YouTube. Carcinia, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on?
Speaking of Floyd, here comes Carcetto.
Yeah, speaking of Floyd, here comes the back. You wanna be big time? Okay, man. Here we go. What's going on, brother? Hey, I'm surprised I didn't see you on the Ustream there with Floyd and stuff, man.
I was on the Ustream. The game knows all about it. That was all over it last night.
Yeah, don't tell me you changed your name, dog. Don't tell me when to do. I heard that Floyd was saying, "Hey, change your name and I'll follow you." Don't tell me you did that.
No. I was just leaving that time. I had to go to work. I'm like, I gotta go.
I was like,
Gabe has dropped me. Gabe, stop following me. He's like, I can't follow this guy.
Actually, my name now is Floyd Ienerweather.
I've got to be honest, Carcetto, I had a rule. I've been cleaning up all the people that I follow. It's been like, I've had like 500 people. I'm down to like 200. And I had a few rules that I was following. One, if people don't tweet very often, like they hadn't in like a week or a month, then they're gone. You know, it's just kind of dead weight. But the other was all the people that ran like screaming girls to Mayweather's Ustream and threw their panties at him. They were gone. They're all gone. They're all gone.
Cold-blooded.
That's cold, man.
Sorry.
I was trying to get you on. I was like, I got to get Gabe on here.
He ain't going to talk to me. Come on. I've been chasing that one-on-one for since before the Mosley fight. They don't want to have a hardball conversation. That's why
I know. That's why I thought it'd be good. That's why I thought it'd be great. This was your chance.
Now, the last time we talked, he started putting his hands on me. I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to run into Floyd in the middle of the night. He might get a little loopy, right?
Oh, drink.
I'm looking kind of good. I've been working out. You know, you never know. I don't know. You couldn't keep his hands on him.
You're going into the I want muscle territory.
Hey, so, Carcetto, let me ask you this, okay, because, you know, you've always been a all-pro Floyd Mayweather, you know, and, you know.
Wait, there's another Floyd Mayweather fan on here? All right.
And
I'm a true fan.
And be the true fan. Be the true fan.
That way one of you guys can have one.
I know. Hey, you don't want the balls to hang. They get cold. You want to cuff the balls, guys. Cuff the balls.
Yeah, but you know what, Dave? You have your mouth to keep other ones warm.
All right, let's get back to
Bobby. Let me go back, man, because now we're derailing off of what I was going to ask. Now we're talking about that. Okay. Okay, so Ernie, you know, he's Ernie said, hey, look, I'm a Floyd Mayweather fan and stuff, but, you know, I think, and I'm asking you because, you know, like I said, you've always been a supporter of Floyd Mayweather, and
right.
Now, though, you're seeing what he's basically, how he's directing his career, which he has every right to do that. Does that turn you off a little bit, or do you keep going, hey, you know what, I see where he's coming from?
Not really, because when Floyd fights, it's an event. It's outside of the sport of boxing. He's like the main event that comes along once a year that everybody flocks to see, but it really doesn't have any effect on the rest of the division. He's past that stage where he's got to fight all the guys that are coming up in the division. He fights one big mega fight a year, and that's pretty much what you're going to see out of it.
Is he really past that of fighting whoever's supposed to be in the division?
What it's come down to. What it's come down to, out of all the guys who were pretty much in one big ball, they have to have one guy come out of there and say, I'm better than all these other guys in the ball, then that person can make a fight with Floyd Mayweather. And then it becomes a big mega event. That's how they have to sell it.
Dave, he's on the territory now.
He got to Oscar territory kind of by a shortcut, by fighting Oscar.
Yeah,
the difference between him and Oscar,
it was all planned.
Let me make my point.
Go for it, Gabe.
It's a very clear point. Because they're very similar in the amount of titles that they have. They're very similar in that they were kind of big for the weight classes they were in. They were picking up weight classes. They have common opponents in Gennaro Hernandez and Gotti. But Oscar, when he hit welterweight, he took on the entire division. Like, he kind of cherry-picked the way that Floyd kind of did, fought certain guys. I mean, Floyd's a linear guy, I think, in two weight classes. but he didn't ever really clear out a whole division. Oscar fought everybody at welterweight, from Tito, Corte. You know, he took on Shane, who moved up in weight. He fought some tough dudes at that weight class. He fought Oba Carr. He had a campaign at welterweight. Floyd has not. When's the last campaign that Floyd has had in this? You know, in the 2000s, he hasn't had one.
But remember,
so how can you tell me that he's the best welterweight in the world when he won't fight welterweights? He's fought one in Shane Mosley and Valdemir.
But wait a minute. If we're comparing the ascent, remember, Oscar fought at 147, but also fought at 154, and then started really, you know, being more selective. I think his Waterloo was 147, much like maybe Floyd's Waterloo was 135. You know, there's little differences. Also, you have to think. Oscar didn't really get to mega status until after the Tito fight. I mean, when you think about it, then he took on Corte and then Mosley, and you know, I see where you're going with it.
Oscar was huge. Oscar was huge pretty much as soon as he came on the scene.
But he didn't really get. I mean, if you look at the numbers as far as what he was doing, he wasn't doing as great as people really remember him doing. It wasn't until really the Cheeto fight that he started to become that mega. Everybody knew about him because of his Olympic story, because of the.
How many was the? When was the Carpentier fight? The Charpentier fight.
I'm actually going to use BoxRec for something good. I'm going to go figure out where.
I love BoxRec. I have no problem with it. I don't have internet right now, other than my iPhone.
Yeah, but see, what people didn't realize is that welterweights weren't making that many, like, pay-per-view sales at that time. Back when Oscar was fighting, so 507, those were big numbers back then.
Seems
to be the bar, because the heavyweight division is totally down.
And Gable backed me up on this. It was the fight before that. He was only making 200,000, 300,000 buys. I mean, and if you look at his pay-per-view records, it really didn't start to ascend until Tito's fight. So, I mean, he was mid-level. He wasn't really the star that everybody remembers him until Tito came along. And that was that natural Puerto Rico versus Mexico rivalry, which something Floyd doesn't have that luxury of having in his back pocket. He can't go back to have, let me go find a Puerto Rican to go fight. Or, you know,
I don't know if you noticed, but he almost fought Felix Trinidad before. That fight was really close to being done.
I don't give any credit for almost.
Yeah.
There's no credit for almost.
I mean, I know there's no credit for it, but it wasn't his doing.
And why even watch it? Hang on a sec. I want to step away, and I want to bring on a relevant fighter, Giovanni Segura. I'll be right back.
Hey, Carcino, real quick, because I got people in the chat room. They want to know, do you have a Floyd Mayweather's poster above your bed?
No, I don't. I got a picture in the car, so when I drive, I see it everywhere I go.
Dave, it's under the bed, right next to the sexy sauce.
He's got one in the car, you know. Hey, you remember that movie? What was that movie with Adam Sandler? The one that really took him to a superstar. What was it called? Happy Gilmore. You remember that where he had the picture of his grandma in the car in the 3D type of you know, the Christmas thing? There you go. That's what you got, man.
Oh man. Go on the Ustream. I'll be on there tonight.
Is he going to be on tonight, man? I don't know, man.
Yeah, if it's on tonight, I'm telling you, it's the greatest thing on the net right now.
You know, I guess
that's what he does. He keeps himself relevant year-round. When most of these guys, they're not relevant unless they have a fight coming up. And that's what boxing needs right now, somebody to generate interest. He's really showing them the blueprint keep himself relevant.
You know what? The thing is, though, is that what you're saying is relevant, but my fighters are relevant by fighting. I see what you're saying. He's going to be on there, and that's all good. It's cool, but I don't know. I'm just not too much into that, to tell you
the same thing they said with Ray Leonard. Remember, Ray Leonard only came around for big fight. He'll fight once, and he'll retire, then comes back. He fought like 3 times in 6 years. And they said the same thing about him. Ray Leonard, why did he keep retiring and come back, retiring and come back? It's because Floyd is at the end of his career. He really has about 2-3 fights left in him. He's like 33, his own career is basically done. This is when you start winding down your career.
Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. Christine, I'm going to put you on hold real quick, brother.
Let's stop talking about Fighter X because nobody gives a shit because he's not fighting. So let's get him out of here and let's bring on a real fighter.
There we go. Giovanni, you on the line, brother?
Giovanni, yeah. Are you there with us?
Yes, yes.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Good, good.
So you had a great sensational night Saturday. You know, a lot of people were not picking you to win this fight. You know, I'll be honest with you. I picked you to win that fight. I didn't think you were going to be able to pull it off. I didn't think you were going to be able to cut the ring off. But you did something, man, that really even Calderon said, hey, he surprised me a bit because you didn't headhunt at all. You strictly went to the body. You made sure you put money in the bank going to the body.
Yeah, there's only one thing I can say. I proved everybody wrong.
You
not
sure
me,
did.
I picked you to win. I picked you to win, Gio, so
I actually
made
all right. Except you.
Yeah, hey. You know,
he called me I guess a dummy, you know those guys that use for the crash? He called me a dummy. He said that Hugo Cáceres was smarter than me and stronger than me, and he said that I was less threat than Cáceres. And I told him, that I was gonna finish him, and I did.
Now he's talking about a rematch, you know, and Giovanni, you gotta give him his props in saying, hey, I want to fight him immediately if I can get that fight. If that fight isn't materialized, do you go back to Puerto Rico or do you say, hey, you know what? I already did it your way. You do it my way. Come down to California.
No. I mean, I think in this case, it's not about where to fight. I think it will be where does it make sense for both of us, you know, to make money. If the fight makes money in Puerto Rico, why not go over there, you know? I'll go there. I have no problem, and I have no problem giving them the rematch.
I wish more fighters talked like you, Gio. I really do. I just, you know, where the fight makes sense, that's where it should happen. I mean, for you, though, you didn't take a lot of damage in that fight. How soon do you expect to get back in the ring?
I don't know. I already have 3 days on the gym. I'm doing my running. I'm doing my daily training. So as soon as possible, you know, I went to the press conference of Margarito Pacquiao, and I spoke to the promoters, and I let them know, you know, I'm in great shape. I feel so good, and I'm not going to be out of the gym. And I went back to the gym, and I tell them, you know, whenever you have a day, try to put me there.
When did you know you had him in there? Was there any doubt inside that ring? Did you think, oh, you know, he's a little faster than I thought, he's a little slicker than I thought? How did you feel about how the fight was going?
No, I knew I was going to get him on the second round. I figured out that the body work was working because when I landed some shots, the reason why he traded punches with me, it was because those shots hurt him, you know, they paralyze him. People don't know when you get a body shot, you don't react right away. It takes a few seconds. And that's why I punish him in those few moments that he gave me on the ropes.
When you stopped him, Giovanni, and let me ask you this, because I was watching it and I had family over and we were watching the fight. When you stopped him and there was pretty much just silence in that whole arena. And you looked a little, like, uncomfortable for a moment. Could I be right about that? I mean, cause it looked like you were like, okay, nobody's going to applaud it, and you put your hands up in the air. I mean, it just seemed like everybody got stopped with him on that eighth round.
Yeah, I feel like I knocked out the whole crowd, too. Yeah, I was more in shock, you know. You can see on the background of the fight, on the crowd, you see Montiel like making some. I saw because I cornered him and he was taking the knee on his corner, So back of his corner, you got Trinidad, you got Juanma Lopez, and you got Montiel. And then they're making shadow boxing, jumping one corner to the other. And when I took a knee, you can see Montiel saying, that's it, no more, that's it. And then Chiquita on the other side screaming at me, and it was like, oh my God, are you serious? This is serious. I just couldn't believe the picture.
Wow. You got to meet Trinidad before the fight, right?
Yeah, I spoke to the media, and I told them, you know, about having no fear whatsoever going to Puerto Rico. I actually was happy because I will have a chance to meet Trinidad. And Juanma, you know, when he comes to LA, he stops by the gym, you know, all the time, and he trains there. And he told me, and he called Ricky, my manager, and he told him, you know what, you guys always open the door for me. I want Giovanni to come to the gym, and you guys are welcome.
Wow.
I want you to bring him here. So he did, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing this big, tall guy, and it was Trinidad. So they surprised me with Trinidad because they knew I wanted to meet him. So I guess Juanma Lopez set me up for that meeting right there. And it was amazing. I didn't even know what to say.
We got our other co-host, Ernie, on the line. Ernie, you got any questions for Giovanni?
No, I interviewed him over at the Margarito press conference. You know, just wanted to say once again, it's truly refreshing to have a champ like him where you could see the humbleness. Just basically because of the event, something he had said, you know, about he was there. He was one of those guys that, you know, would have a barbecue focused around a fight, and he's been there and he's done that. And I think that really related to every fan out there that was really rooting and was really behind him. And I just wanted to say it's been very, very enjoyable seeing Gio Co from fighting at the Maywood Activity Center against Panchito Arce and flattening him in one round to where he's come now. And it's really, you know, for all of us that followed him, for all of the people that have been, you know, around the scene when he trained at Azteca, when he trained, I remember he was training at Sergio Mora's gym. You know, it's just really nice to see, and it's refreshing to see that he hasn't changed a single bit. So congratulations, champ. That's all I got to say.
Thank you very much.
You know, Gio, really, where do you go from here? I mean, is a rematch, is that what you want, or is it? Do you want to move up now? Do you feel like you've already done what you needed to do in this division as a super flyweight? Do you move up, or do you give them the rematch? I mean, is there going to be promoters in the way? Because it looks like Top Rank and any other promoter, they didn't even bother to back this fight up. You know what I mean? It just kind of looked like they left it out there in the wind. And now that it became a fight of the year a real epic Portugal versus Mexico fight, I'm now worried now that they saw, hey, you know what, we didn't bank on this rematch. We need a bank on that. Could there be problems, or do you continue doing what you had said when you – and I got to applaud you when you said, "Do other champions, please do what we've done, is give the fight fans a fight. You know, pound for pounds, fight pound for pounds."
You know what? If in boxing there were a way to make them fight, force them to fight me, I would do that. But I mean, it's not up to me. It's up to them to fight me. You know, now my job right now is my job. You know, get back in the gym, work hard, and be ready for everything. I will leave that to my manager, Richard Mota. He knows what I want. And he's fighting for what I want. He's looking for ways, you know, to make it happen. And all I can do about it is train hard and be ready for that, you know. Hopefully, that's why I put me on the map. Hopefully, people want to see me fight with champions. Hopefully, that pushed everybody to fight me. And if they want a rematch, I'll give them to them wherever they want.
You knew when you end up defeating Calderon, and you know, the last time we had you on the show, I didn't bother to mention this. I forgot about it. But now that I got you on, I got to ask you about this, Giovanni. Capetillo was on your corner. Puerto Rico denied him of getting in the corner of the fight, didn't allow you to give you any instructions and stuff. And I, for a moment, when I was watching the fight and they were talking about it, I had, you know, looked over to one of my family members. I said, if he wins, I go, if this kid wins, I hope nobody tarnishes it by bringing up Capetillo. That has not happened. But let me ask you, as a Mexicano, why is he still in your corner?
Because he knew about this fight, how important it was. You know, he didn't care about what the people say. You know, he said, you know what, mijo, you know what to do. I give you the instructions. You're an older man already. You know what to do, you know. But, I mean, it has nothing to do with me, his problem. There's no way they can point the finger at me for him and on his situation, you know. And I have nothing to say bad about Capetillo, you know. He's just, I don't know what to say about.
He's not the guy that wraps your hands, right?
No, the only guy who has wrapped my hands in all my fights since the first one has been Arturo Mota, Richard Mota's dad, my manager. He's the one. I don't know how it feels to be wrapped by nobody else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was people from Puerto Rico on the when they were wrapping my hands, you know, they saw everything, they agreed. I mean, there's no excuses for it, you know.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like I said, I just had to bring that up and just to hear it from you, again, thank you again for a great fight on Saturday night. Thank you again for taking this fight. Like I thank Calderon for you guys both for showed being true warriors. You stepped into the ring, and I appreciate two warriors, you know, one from Mexico, one from Puerto Rico. You guys came and you showed up and you gave us something to really honestly be happy about, where you hear other mainstream fans say that boxing is dead, and you guys showed it's far from dying. It's far from, you know, being a sport that's going to be pushed aside by two guys that, you know, get in the cage. It's only sad that the American media did not take notice on you guys being super flyweights and being that this was going to be a epic and historical fight. And I got to just say thank you, brother, for coming on, leaving in the ring.
Yeah, I guess MMA will say he tap out.
I guess he did.
Exactly. Well, Gio, man, thank you again, brother. We're going to have to let you go and hope to have you on again soon. I got to patch in our next guest, brother. But I hope you guys do the rematch, because I'm definitely going to be tuning in to watch that.
I'll be picking you again.
I'll be ready for everything. You know what Giovanni brings to the table, so just expect a good fight from me versus whoever wants it.
Absolutely.
I wish we had like 30 more champions and fighters just like you, man. I really admire your guts. I admire the fact that you're willing to fight everybody, and just props to you, man, and congratulations.
Congratulations, champ. And let me bring in another Mexicano fighter. Ponce de Leon, are you on the line with us? Ahí estás?
Hey, aquí estamos.
¿Cómo estás, Ponce?
Muy bien, gracias a Dios.
Yo voy a hablar en inglés y va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Ok.
First off, you know, he's got a fight coming up on September 18th. It's against Antonio Escalante, who was on Leaving in the Ring. And, you know, before the fight was signed, Antonio did stress and how much he wanted this fight. Ponce looked fantastic against Cornelius Locke. The change of guard, of the way of his fight style, Z, when did that finally come to play? I mean, when did he figure, hey, I gotta kind of get into the boxing tradition and not rely on my punching power anymore?
Hola, Ponce León. Pregunta a Dave. Tienes una pelea con Antonio Escalante en septiembre 18 y sabes que es una pelea por la que has estado esperando por un tiempo. Hace poco te enfrentaste a Cornelius Locke y te viste muy bien ante Cornelius Locke. hubo un poco de cambio en tu estilo de pelea y él quiere saber cuándo pasó eso, cuándo te diste cuenta que tenías que ya modificarlo un poco, caer más en boxeo y no depender tanto de la pegada.
Eso pasa con el tiempo, ya con la experiencia que va pasando uno, eso lo va agarrando uno con el tiempo, y aparte, ustedes no me han visto pelear mucho tiempo, y desde apenas me dieron la última pelea, no vieron las otras que estuve en México, en Centroamérica, y yo tengo un cambio muy grande, y esta pelea con Escalante la estoy esperando, y ahí es la que me va a abrir la puerta a esta pelea, porque me voy a ganar, y ustedes, y todo la gente, toda la opción va a estar pendiente de mí.
He says it happens with time and with experience. You start realizing it over time. And maybe people didn't notice before because they only saw his last fight, but they haven't been seeing his fights before that one in Mexico and Latin America, where he has been implementing that same change.
You know, I looked a little bit into his tribe. Of where he's coming from in the mountains of Mexico, and you know they've even mentioned it on HBO. It's not a tribe of aggression. How did he fall into boxing if his tribe is not like that? What made him decide to be a fighter?
Tomando en cuenta de dónde vienes, del área en México donde vienes, la gente de ahí no tienden a ser agresivos. Y quieres saber de dónde salió que quisiste boxear cuando pues las personas de esa área no tienen a ser así.
Es mi vecino, porque tienes razón, en Chihuahua, en el estado de Chihuahua, casi fue el único que ha salido campeón de ahí, no ha habido grandes boxeadores, pero...
no hay nada.
Ha salido. Lo que sí es que tenemos muy buena condición y las ganas de salir adelante.
He says it's a Latin thing. It is true that people there tend to be more pacific, and there have not been too many great boxers coming from Chihuahua. But he says it's just a Latin thing, and most important, well, for him to have a good condition to fight.
Ponce, this is Gabriel Montoya with Max Boxing. I'm just curious, you know, you're heading into this fight, how much do you know about your opponent, about Escalante? If you could just break him down, what do you see?
Pregunta Gabriel Montoya de Max Boxing. ¿Cuánto sabes de Antonio Escalante? Y si tuvieras que explicar lo que ves en él como boxeador y su estilo de pelea, ¿qué podrías decir?
Claro, y me he seguido, he peleado algunas veces y he visto sus peleas, entonces es un peleador agresivo, tira muchos golpes y siempre da muy buenas condiciones a pelear.
Yes, he has been following him and watching some of his fights. He describes him as an aggressive fighter that throws a lot of punches and always comes in a good condition to fight.
Oh, he's not going to tell me if he has any weaknesses or anything like that that he sees, obviously. But I'm curious, just going back to what Dave said about that he's boxing more, does he feel like right now he's peaking as a fighter, that he's fighting the best he's ever fought?
Volviendo a lo que Dave había mencionado antes, que está boxeando más, ¿tú crees que consideras que estás, ya pasaste esa cumbre en tu carrera, en tu condición, ¿no? ¿Ya pasaste el punto en donde estabas en mejores condiciones?
Sí, acabo de llegar a ese punto, exactamente acabo de llegar, porque ahora estoy más completo, ya sé fajarme, sé boxear, y tengo la experiencia, y ahora estoy mucho mejor que antes.
He says, I feel that I just reached my peak, because I feel that right now I'm a more complete fighter, that I can brawl as good as I can box. So I'm more complete and I have more experience.
Go ahead, Ernie. Ernie, you there? I don't know.
Who, me? Hello?
Yeah. Go ahead, Ernie.
Uh-huh.
No, he's not. I don't know where he's at. Oh, there he is, right down by. Ernie, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Am I not going all right?
You're on. Go ahead.
Okay. It seemed like after the Juanma Lopez fight, it took quite a bit of time to come back. What was that attributed to? Was it just, you know, kind of a soul searching, or were you in between managers, in between trainers, or something? Were you trying to talk out there after the Juanma fight?
Después de la pelea de Juanma, a ti te tomó un tiempo regresar a boxear de nuevo. ¿A qué se debió eso? ¿Fue algún problema de manejadores, promotores? ¿A qué se debió la tardanza en volver al ring?
Yo estuve en México. Ustedes no me vieron aquí pelear, pero hice muchas peleas en México. Aparte de eso, las otras peleas las hice en México. Y apenas es la segunda pelea que voy a hacer en Estados Unidos de esa vez.
He says he kept fighting. It's just that he fought in Mexico, and those fights were not televised here, so we didn't see him. But he was fighting in Mexico. This is only the second fight that he has in the U.S.
You know, Ernie, you got a question still?
No, I'm good.
Okay, Ponce, after the fight with Juanma Lopez. And, you got knocked out in that first round. Is that when you kind of looked at it and go, listen, I got to learn how to box because I did everything wrong in that fight with Juanma? Is that when he decided I need to change my game?
Después de la pelea de Juanma, ¿fue ahí que decidiste que tenías que cambiar tu estilo de pelea basado en las cosas que pudieras ver que hiciste mal en la pelea de Juanma? ¿Fue en ese momento que decidiste cambiar y boxear más?
Sí, porque siempre estaba a querer noquear, acabar a mis oponentes, y después el error que cometí con Juanma López, y fue cuando me agarró un golpe, me agarró frío, me agarró malas condiciones, y entonces tengo que en las próximas peleas ir a trabajar más despacio y trabajar más a distancia, y aparte no me he querido forzar a ir a noquear a mis oponentes todavía.
Yes, he says yes. His problem on that fight was that he wanted to, prior to that fight and during that fight, he had the attitude that he wanted to knock out and finish his opponent right away. And because of that, it cost him with Juanma. Knocked him out cold, and he was in bad condition. So after that, he realized he has to work more slowly, work more at a distance. And not look so much to knock out his opponent.
Well, being that he's going to be on September 18th, and he's going to be at the Staples Center, and he's going to be fighting a young, strong, durable fighter, a contender. Does he attack somebody that's on the uprise to test them, or does he do what he did to Locke, Cornelius Locke was actually a veteran fighter, a guy that had experience where he had to box him. Is he the veteran in this fight, or does he go after the young kid to see whether he can hold up to Ponce's punch?
En septiembre 18, que estás peleando en Staples Center, y estás peleando contra un boxeador joven, fuerte, y él se pregunta, en ese caso, con ese tipo de boxeador, ¿tú crees que debas ir tras de él y perseguirlo, o crees que debas sea más inteligente de tu parte pelear una pelea similar a la de Cornelius Locke, que era un veterano, y donde decidiste boxear más?
La verdad que no lo sé. No lo sé cómo se va a presentar él, pero él como se presente, yo lo voy a resolver. Si tengo que boxear, o si tengo que fajarme, ahí lo voy a decidir cuando pise el ring, desde que suene la campana, porque no puedo decir que voy a hacer una cosa ahorita. Tengo plan, pero si él no se presta para el estilo que estoy pensando pelearle, voy a cambiarlo y voy a pelearle de la manera que me acomode.
He says, I don't know that yet. The fight will determine what will happen. If I have to brawl or box more, I will decide that after the bell rings. He does have a plan. But he says that you never know what's going to happen. And if after the fight starts, it happens that Escalante doesn't fit to the strategy that he developed before, then he will adapt and change that.
Is there a lot riding on his back with this fight? Does he have to prove, not just to himself, but to Golden Boy and to his fans, that he is back completely against Escalante? Or does he feel that he's the stepping stone for this young fighter?
Tú en esta pelea, ¿tú sientes que tienes que probarte a no solamente a ti, sino a Golden Boy y a la fanaticada, que estás de regreso completamente, o tú crees que te están usando como como un escalón para seguir promocionando Escalante?
Yo me estoy preparando para ganar esta pelea. Es una oportunidad, una pelea difícil como para Escalante como para mí. Es una pelea que el que gane va por el campeonato del mundo, y yo quiero ser campeón del mundo otra vez. Entonces tengo que pasar por encima de Escalante.
He says I'm preparing myself to win that fight. It is a good opportunity for me and for Escalante. The winner of this fight will go for the world title, and I want to be the world champion.
Absolutely. Ponce, pues gracias mucho para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros aquí en Leave the Ring. Y buena suerte cuando el día viene, September 18th, ¿ok?
Gracias. Ok, muchas gracias. Dios los bendiga a todos. Y allá vamos a estar peleando. Ustedes me van a ver ganar ese día. Y van a ver que va a ser el próximo campeón del mundo.
Ok, gracias, compa.
Sí, gracias. Vale.
So he said, thanks for having him in the show, and to all the fans and everybody, they'll see him on September 18th, they'll see him win and become the next world champion along the way.
And thank you very much again, Z, for coming on and translating for us, like always. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Always
my
a pleasure.
My pleasure. Take care. Have fun.
Take care.
You too.
All right.
What? Dave, I'll be right back. I've got a call coming through. I'll be right back.
Okay, no problem, Mustafa. Hey, you guys want to call in right now, go ahead. You can call in. The phone lines are open. I do like what Ponce de Leon had to say about his upcoming fight. It's a tough fight. It is a fight that I know little fight fans are not too happy about. The September 18th fight being on pay-per-view, Sugar Shane Mosley versus, Sergio Mora. But that fight there... Huh?
It's the best fight on TV.
I said that earlier. That's what I was saying. It is the best fight there on TV, And we've had Antonio on. We should have got Antonio on again today. We should have done. Funny. I know. I wasn't. I got so many things going on right now. My old man being sick and all this other stuff. And I can hear the smallest violin playing right now. But I just had a kind of things just kind of being thrown out, and I haven't had a chance to even really honestly get back to a lot of folks, and everybody's hitting me up.
A little off this week too.
I have been. I've been
a little off this week, with the whole Skype thing happening, and it's still a good show. It's just that we're a little off right now. And now, like I said, I was going back to discuss the Escalante Ponce fight. It has all the makings of just a slugfest. It's going to be an intense fight, and hopefully, it makes up for what could be, two other fights that. Because I think the Mosley fight is going to be good. I don't see much in the. I still don't see anything in the Ortiz Harris fight. I don't see how Viv's gonna be able to withstand what Victor can throw, man.
Yeah. I don't see it either. The funny thing is Vivian Vicious Harris at one time was a guy that was really prepped up to be something. And he just fell apart quick.
Yeah, he fell apart pretty quick. And it was one of those things where the bark really was worse than the bite in him. It's a shame because at one point he was a really stellar fighter. And there was he had a right hand that really rivaled the best at 140. And I don't know. I mean, this is his make or break moment for him. If he gets a win over Ortiz, which I don't see happening, he's clearly back in the picture. If not, I think it's time for him to, you know, rethink this whole boxing business. And, you know, if not, you know, I don't see him ever getting on a major show again, you know, unless he's the actual opponent. You know, and with the Baldomir Alvarez fight, you know, if Baldomir showed anything, you know, at 54 of recent vintage that could made me excited, then, you know, maybe. But he got outclassed, outworked in his last fight against Vernon Forrest. And, you know, mm-hmm. suffice to say, it's nothing that I don't think Canelo can withstand. The only thing
I could say it's where I kind of agree with Baldomir on his press conference call was that if, you know, Jose Cotto was able to hurt Canelo, Baldomir says, I should be able to hurt him too. And if I get him hurt, I'm going to keep him in trouble. But Canelo is just one of those kids, man, that he's strong. And he's got a really thick neck.
Yeah.
You know? He's
but
got a really.
But the thing with Baldomir, though, is that, I mean, he can throw a right hand. Canelo can go to the restroom, come back, have a press conference, get some more water, go greet fans for a little bit before that punch lands. He's too slow. For mm-hmm. Canelo to actually, I think, be worried. I mean, what Cotto caught him with was something that he didn't see at all.
And Cotto was, you know, Cotto kept coming forward. He really made that fight. He was the smaller guy, but he just pressed that fight. He was pressuring him, being on top of him, and I think that's where he was getting. That's where not even his luck. That was just his workmanship showing. It was the telling of that belt. And I don't think Baldomir. And I think you're absolutely right, Ernie. Baldomir. Does not have that in him, you know. Where Baldomir, for some reason, believes he's a boxer.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I think that's the hard part with this is just that, you know, I don't see how these two fights are even remotely competitive unless we have to hope that both the opponents, and they are opponents. Let's not sugarcoat this a little bit. We have to hope that both opponents draw back to fights years ago that they were years ago.
Right,
and I just don't see that happening. Gabe, you back?
Which ones are you? I know that the Baldomir one, but I just stepped back on the line.
Vivian Harris,
Victoria. That's a blowout.
Yeah, go for it.
What they are is sometimes it's not who you fight, but how you or who you beat, but how you beat them.
Yeah,
and I think that's what it's going to tell us a lot. You know, Is Canelo going to step on the gas a little bit against Baldomir, have a beginning, middle, and end where he invests in body shots, breaks him down, and tries to be that guy that knocks him out? Or is he, you know, kind of content to stink out the joint and kind of box safely? We'll find that out about him. And then with Ortiz, it's like he's got a guy that if he lands a good punch could hurt him. He's got decent speed and length, but he's real chinny and he's shop-worn. Is Victor going to be cautious Victor, or is he going to be vicious Victor? Or is he going to be intelligently vicious Victor and find a way to knock him out?
Or is he going to be heartless Victor?
We'll find out. Ernie did not say that. That was Dave Lenya, the guy who had Victor in his avatar.
Victor knows, man. I'm playing with you, Vic. You know I'm playing with you, man.
I'll say this.
That's going to be the thing. And you're right, dude. He is. Glaciers go, you know, that Baldomir guy, he's pretty slow. You know,
me and you could go right in the middle of happy hour, go have a Yard House drink or two, come back and eat some land. I just don't, you know what? It's the name that you know, when he wins, when Canelo wins, oh, he's got to win over Baldomir. Yeah, so what? You know, so what? You know, it's a Baldomir of old. It's like, you know, I'm not seeing this. I'm not feeling that fight. I can be honest with you. I don't think Baldomir has anything up his sleeve. You know, it's like Dave said, he thinks he's a boxer when he's really not. You know, and Vic, we're all hoping that Vivian has a right hand still.
Well, that's kind of bad. Yeah, and you know what, Ernie? The thing that's also this is the thing, though. Okay, let me tell you this. Okay, promoters, Golden Boy, whatever, if you guys are listening to this, okay, I'm not bagging what you're doing, okay, the pay-per-view thing, okay? Don't get me wrong here, but I'm going to give you some insight in how fight fans think, okay? And this is what we're thinking. You're putting Canelo in with Baldomir, okay? look exactly in what we're saying about Baldemir, meaning that we really don't care much about him. We don't really think a whole lot about him, okay? That's the first thing. That's the key word. We don't think a whole lot about him. Now, where this can backfire on you, if Canelo does not do his job, meaning he doesn't come out and doesn't blow out a guy that's not even a contender anymore, a guy that doesn't even have a ranking at the moment, he doesn't do his job, that only makes American viewers go, what's the whole hype about this kid? He gave us how many X amount of rounds when he was supposed to really honestly handle a guy that's supposed to be just a human punching bag. You know, get him in and out of there.
To be honest with you, a Carson Jones, you know, a Roberto Garcia, you know, two guys that have been proven at light middleweight that are still active, I think would be more intriguing and I think smarter as far as, you know, giving Canelo a true test as to where he's at. You know, Baldemir brings a name and name only. Anybody who thinks otherwise, I really have to, you know, check their credentials a little bit.
Well, he was the linear welterweight champion that Floyd beat to get that title. So he does have some class, according to Floyd. But you're right, as a junior middleweight, he hasn't proven anything really. I mean, you know, he's best remembered at junior middleweight for getting his ass kicked by Vernon Forrest. You know, but here's the thing: it's a class thing, though. This is a classic fight, Dave, and it's a different kind of risk. It's like you're not putting your fighter at risk in terms of he can lose to this guy, but it's exactly right that he could look bad, and so we get to find out about Canelo. It's, you know,
well, he can look bad. He can look bad in terms of himself, though. It's not the fighter that's going to make him look bad. Yeah, but it's himself. It's whether he's a fighter that's going to have the killer instincts and what we want and what we're looking for. You know, as fight fans, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for that heartless warrior. The warrior that comes in and just takes care of business and doesn't really care about getting on, you know, Ustream and all these other things, that just want to get in there and do and be irrelevant in that way.
You know, honestly, I'm looking through the list. A fight with Ronald Hearns would have been attractive. You know, it would have been, you know, that you know, okay, these two guys are on the cusp. One was, and he lost to Yorgi. And the other one, you know, is still, you know, unproven. That would have been a nice little fight. Like I said, Carson Jones, who's on a win streak, would have been a great fight. Roberto Garcia, who just got, you know, who just lost to Antonio Margarito, but has proven that he can come off the deck and give a tough fight. That would have been an attractive. And these guys are all, I think, you know, promoter lists, so it wouldn't have been hard for Golden Boy to come in and say, hey, you know, we got X amount. You know, and I understand where Golden Boy is, and I'm not criticizing their motive. They're trying to get, you know, Canelo a name to have under his belt and say, look, I beat this guy. Because, you know, let's face it, when you matched up against Jose Miguel Cotto above 147, when we remember Jose Miguel Cotto as, if anybody really remembers him, as a lightweight, you know, it doesn't bode well. And then to say that, you know, and to almost have Canelo out on his feet in round one really doesn't bode well. And I think, you know, maybe they did take the smart, safe approach, but it's, you know, like you said,
it's a safe approach, but it's too obvious. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a safe approach, but not the obvious safe approach. That's the thing that gets fight fans bowled up, because it's basically, you're like, hey, listen, it's a safe fight, but pay for it, watch it. You know what I mean? Yep. Rather than giving us something that is safe, but yet intriguing safe.
Well, I actually kind of like this fight. I gotta be honest. I already know what's gonna happen, but it's that kind of fight. It's a different kind of test, other than a physical test. And I believe that he'll get in with anybody. I mean, I interviewed him. I did a one-on-one. Actually, it was a two-on-one. Mike Rosenthal and I spoke to him. I asked him about the fight. He did say that he wanted to get the knockout. And he talked about the being hurt against Cotto, and he said really it was the moment that really, granted, you know, I don't think he denigrated the fact that the guy caught him and he was buzzed, but he was talking about how, you know, that fight really wasn't him. He was so overwhelmed by this huge event, this, you know, all the lights, all the people. I mean, it was a huge fight for him to have a, you know, to be at, and it really threw him, and he wasn't able to kind of focus in and fight actually fight and like focus in moment to moment. It was more like he was kind of, just off his game that night.
But
and
you know what,
I'll give him that. Because he looked great in his last fight.
You know what bugs me about that, though, is that Canelo has been in bigger crowds before, because when he fought, it
was... I was going to say that, yeah.
He's been in
it's not the amount of people. It's who's sitting at ringside and what that card meant. I mean, that was a major card. I mean, it's one thing to be in front of a lot of people. And speaking as a performer, I've performed, I think the biggest group was maybe like over 1,000 people. But to me, it was like two crowds that were like... But I'm speaking about nerves. And you can deal with 1,000 people. And if you don't know anybody in that crowd, you can kind of tune them out. But if you're in a crowd of like even just 50 people, but you know who those people are and they have, like, matter to your future or the history of what you did and they're important to who's, you're going to be fucking nervous, flat out. So I'll give him that.
How's he going to react when the same crowd, here on the 18th, against...
He's 19. He's got to learn sometime. I think he's going to do a hell of a lot better.
But honestly, that's why I think maybe a fight like Ronald Hearns would have been, more, maybe meaningful, I guess.
But Hearns doesn't really have that great a chin, and maybe they wanted him to go rounds.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not intrigued by this fight nearly as much.
Yeah.
This is kind of amazing.
Except because, I found intrigue in the Guerrero-Casamayor fight where you did it. So
that's what I was just going to say. That's kind of amazing. Here I'm on the other side arguing.
But it's happened because, when you do take a little bit of a shine to a fighter, you do want to see them in with guys who bring out a little intrigue. And for me, since I am a Ghost fan and I followed Ghost for a while, seeing him against Casamayor was intriguing to me because I wanted to see what he had against the old man. I think the same thing could apply to you. You've had a little intrigue with him, with Canelo. You want to see what he does against a proven champ, which Valdemir was. I mean, he not only beat that, but he defended his title. So he is a proven champ. I can see that. It's just seeing Valdemir and how slow and lethargic he could be. It doesn't intrigue me.
In other words, we saw a little bit more life to Casamayor than we were seeing with Valdemir. But hey, let me pass him some fight fans and stuff. And the lines are open.
Can I make a pick on that fight? Can I make a pick just to cap it? The conversation. I'll tell you, ninth round uppercut from Canelo, he'll get stopped on his feet, and they'll mark him as the first guy to stop Valdemir.
And I'll say this. If it stops, it's because Valdemir stops it himself. He goes to his corner and says, I don't want to do this anymore. But I don't see that. I think it's going to be a one, what is it, 10 rounds or 12?
I think it's 12.
I think it's
a special attraction. I could be wrong.
Maybe a 118-109 decision.
I think it goes all the way down, and I think that's what's going to hurt him, is that it's going to go the distance, and people are going to be disappointed, and it's going to be like you didn't get the old warrior out of there like you should have, and that's what's going to leave. Let me pass him some fight fans. I got Real Spitz from Hawaii. What's up, brother? You're on live
what's
right
cracking?
Now on the ring. What's cracking, dog?
What's
How
cracking?
You doing, man?
Chilling, man. I'm juiced. I got to give a big shout-out to Mr. Montoya. Check this out, gentlemen. I am a big fan of the boxing game. I call every show out there, and every single host from, Rope-A-Dope, from Boxing Truth, from OTG, everybody and their mama picked Calderon, all right? So, Dave Montoya, big shout-out to you, homie. It was me and you against the world, basically, and I just got to give you guys props for getting him on because I'm a huge fan. A lot of fans say his style is garbage. Bottom line, he comes out, he puts it all on the line. He's an entertaining fighter, and I think that's what we need. We don't need live streams of Mayweather flashing jewelry talking about, talking out his ass, Dave. So, yeah, man, I want to get that through, man, and let fight fans know that, hey, guess what, man, the game has changed. You guys were talking about it earlier about, what is it about African-American fighters, for example, and it's changed. Guys, we don't want to see the Sugar Ray Leonards no more. We don't want to see good guys. We want to see, it's like, basically, they got to come off like assholes. That's why Jermaine Taylor really didn't make that breakthrough.
He's making fun of him all the time. You know what I mean? His hometown would make fun of him all the time about being such a goody-goody.
Word.
But you think about, Trinidad, that dude just looked like he loved fighting. You'd see him in the corner with his 90s fade,
you know, that's kind of, you know, the hair going straight up the flat top. And, but he's grinning, he's bouncing up and down, but then when the fight happens, he just knocks the shit out of people, and he's like a machine, you know, like an assassin. And that guy, not speaking English, was able to be such a huge draw that Oscar had to fight him. You know, that's when that fight became big. Well, I just don't understand. Maybe we don't have a guy like that anymore. We don't have
No, you know what it is, really, honestly, is that, you know, you talk about Tito, you talk about a lot of these Latino fighters.
Mayorga.
Mayorga is an exception, but I would love to talk shit. But I'm talking about other Latino fighters that, you know what I mean? That really, Latinos really don't like to hear their fighters talk a lot of crap. It's an American way. You know what I mean?
What it is, too, though, is that when they talk crap, it's from a machismo point of view. It's not, you know, there's no flash to it. It's like, we'll see who's the more Mexican of the two fighters when you pit a Mexican versus Mexican. It's the shit talking that they do is, I'm willing to die in the ring. I'm willing to
fight
the best. You know, that's their type of shit talking. Whereas we're now starting to get the whole, oh man, whatever, you ain't
you're
on
a
my
midget.
Level. You got three losses, you know, all that. You know, we don't need to hear it. And no, boxing fans aren't used to that, and they don't really care for that. You know, it's one of those things. Even Mike Tyson, when he used to talk, in such a manner that you would say, "Damn, dude, this guy's fire right now. This guy, I'll eat your children." You know, it's one of those things where you just,
I'll fuck you till you love me. What about that one? That's the classic line. I love that line.
That's my all-time favorite line.
Dave, I'm not into your personal life.
Yo, but they got Bernard Hopkins, and check this out. Here's another example. You got Bernard Hopkins, man. I think he's actually going to get really beat up for the first time in his career and probably stop, but it's kind of like, even prior to that, you know what I mean? People weren't really into his style, but the fact that dude can trash talk and dude had a personality, I mean, that's what, I mean, really turned people onto the fight. I mean, it wasn't Bernard Trout. Let's keep it real.
Yeah, but Spitz, his trash talking was a little bit different, though. It was more kind of like, you know, I'm going to do this to you, I'm going to do that. Never really dug in deep about saying, hey, your wife left you, you know, you're paying alimony. He never took it outside, really honestly, out of boxing, except with Tito when he took the flag away from his hand and he threw it in the ground.
That was strong.
You know what I mean? That was like a strong move, but I think that move was because he knew this kid's got a lot of pop. I got to do something extra to get in his head. With a lot of other fighters, even with Mayorga, talking about Corey Spink's mom died, you know, he said, you don't have to cry because you're going to see her pretty soon. That to me is funny. You know, don't get me wrong. I've been in plenty of arguments in a street fight where I've gotten really low, but man, those are some low blows. You know what I'm saying?
But think about, I'll take that, which I thought was one of the most tasteless things ever, but, you know, it is funny, and I always kind of go funny first. But you look at Floyd and Shane talking shit to each other. We were laughing about this the other night with our PNR crew. Floyd's going, you see this? This suit is handmade. This is silk, blah, blah, blah. You're just off the rack. And Shane's comeback, poor guy, this is custom made. That's our trash talk now, you know? What kind of watch are you wearing? You got a Timex on. It's just sad.
I'll see you on Twitter.
Trash talk.
Even harkening back to, like, Hagler Hearns, I mean, there wasn't a lot of trash talk, but what they talked about, you felt, and it was serious, and it was just from a vein of just badass. You know, now you're exactly right. My shit's handmade silk. Oh, well, mine custom made, too. Ha, you're lying. I'm going to tweet about this. And that's exactly what our smack talking has become in boxing.
Twitter has actually, like, made a huge impact to me, man, because I used to post on boxing forums 24/7. Once Twitter came out and I was able to just jam out on the iPhone or what have you, it's just really been, it's really been a blessing to me personally. I mean, you got Gabe Montoya, who is a Twitter superstar, out there, you know, holding it down. Gabe, you and you got into it, brother. The first time me and Gabe met was on Twitter, and we were just hopping it up about boxing. Once I said, and I was tipsy, Gabe, I don't know if you remember this, I said, Kermit Cintron did some pretty bitch-made shit for, you know, the acting, the Oscar nominee performance, and Gabe jumped down my throat, boy.
Oh,
he let me have it, and basically chin-checked me. And it was funny because Gabe is notorious for chin checking people on Twitter.
Dude. Gabe is the syndicate. Gabe is the syndicate. You've heard of the West Nile familia. This dude's the West Nile Twitter. All I can say, hey, Spit, all I can say is that I'm glad he's on my team.
Who's the latest victim? Gabe? Omar Henry?
Tim Sparks.
Is it murder if you put the gun in your own mouth?
Oh.
I don't know. I guess I just pulled the trigger. This Michael Gallegos, I hope I'm saying his name right. He's a really intelligent guy. You should follow him on Twitter. He said to me, because even Oscar fought the Pacquiao of the world in his last years. You know, we can't get Floyd right now to fight Pacquiao. Oscar fought him way past his prime, returned to 147 after 10 years. We dog him for losing and quitting. But you know what, Floyd? He got in the ring with him. Didn't ask for blood test either. That's my problem with Floyd Mayweather. I don't know. I guess I am just an angry guy, and I express myself on Twitter. But, you know, I've yet to really meet anybody that proves me wrong in a lot of the things that I say. They may attack the way I say it, but, you know, I'm sorry. We still don't have that fight.
And please, no one mention Omar Henry's name anymore, because every time we mention his name, he calls.
And then we got to go through the dude. We already told you we're not going to have you on because you need to.
You know what? I'm going to talk about him, though, because what's funny is that, like, he's got fans and people he actually knew. Because I don't know Omar Henry. I caught a couple pro fights. I was juiced about him, woo-woo-woo. But it's funny because he's, like, deleting people off his friends list on Facebook, on Twitter. He's getting rid of – he's cutting fools off. And it's kind of like people are saying that dude thinks he's actually a star because he's kicking it at the big boy mansion. He's doing his thing in Vegas. And I'm looking at it like this. I'm like, damn, he's really doing it. I like this guy. Do your thing. But to the point where it's getting to the point where it's kind of like, man, is this guy really serious? Like, what's really going on with Omar Henry? And this could be like, I mean, something new. I mean, who else came to the game like Omar Henry, who was basically, I mean, to me, just turned pro, got this much attention, you know what I mean, got this much of a following. And I'm actually going to be, intrigued and also going to be tuning in. Regardless, if, you know, love or hate Omar Henry, people are going to be tuning in. And I won't be surprised if he hooks up with Al Haymon. And next thing you know, we got another, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to, without disrespecting him. Exactly.
Another one-hit wonder? No, I'm kidding. You know what, man? I agree with you, real quick. Because he's doing something that a lot of prospects are trying to do. You know what I mean? He's got a lot of exposure.
And earn their keep?
No, well, listen. Dun, 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 dun. You know, I say, look, I understand where some fight fans don't feel what he's doing. They're upset. But at the same time, I'm not going to knock his hustle. He's doing what he's got to do. He's got the exposure out there. He's doing it and stuff. But right now, how I'm looking at it, I think it was all good and dandy in the beginning, but it's backfired. And now we're starting to see how he's reacting to it when it backfires. You know what I mean?
I think sometimes, that's exactly what's happening. You hit the nail on the head because at one point, everybody was like, who's Omar Henry? Who's this kid? I want to know. And then it got to the point where I think, you know, according to a lot of other people, he's feeling himself a little bit, you know, and nothing wrong with that. If you're feeling it, cool, run with it. But I think it's now gotten to a point where it's at that same level. It's the same thing all over again. And rather than turning that newfound success into, okay, now watch me fight, it's been, let's take away all this, the Uber Twitter, the Facebook, whatever you want to call it. This kid hasn't fought since March 13th, and he's a prospect. You don't fight every 6 months if you're a prospect at this level. You fight every 2 to 3 months. You got to get fights under your belt. This kid's also coming off a first-round knockout where he's not getting rounds in. From his career standpoint.
But let me just chime in real quick and say something, though. He's been mentioned on the show several times, so he's doing something.
But no. From doing something from getting notarized. Oh yeah, 100%. You're not gonna get any complaint. My concern now becomes, okay, you're famous. You've got a lot of followers. You got a lot of people watching you. When are we gonna actually see you now fight? It's now 6 months. It's now 6 months, and there's not even talks of him fighting. And if he's still under Top Rank, the closest fight that he's going to get as far as the shows are concerned, what, November 13th or 12th? That's going to be in another additional 2 months off. You know, it's one
he's
of those
not going to be on either of those cards.
Huh?
He's not going to be on any of the cards the rest of the year, according to Top Rank.
Yeah, and see, wow. That's one of those things where you got a kid who found a vein, went with it, got a lot of good press, got a lot of press, period. And instead of capitalizing on it, instead of turning it into a good business deal for himself, people are kind of stagnated. They say, no, you know, when are you going to fight again? Now you start, instead of saying, hey, kid, do your thing, you're starting to get a lot of people saying, hey, when are you going to fight again? Hey, bro, when are we going to see you in the ring again? And he has no answer for that. He has an answer for everything else. You know, I'm hanging with Floyd. Floyd and me went to go see, what is that, Takers? You know, all this and, you know, whatever. But he has no answer for when he's going to fight again. And that's the most important thing. You're a
me and Floyd went to go see Disney on Ice.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you're first and foremost, you're a fighter. You're a boxer. You got to this position by boxing and being really good. Don't waste this talent by sitting on the sidelines and talking a good game. Go back into the ring and be the prospect that a lot of people fell for. You know, I was one of those guys. I kept saying, hey, Omar Henry's probably the best prospect in boxing right now at one point. Now it's 6 months later, and it's like, okay, when are we going to see this turn up, you know?
I think that's what Omar is missing the point and what we were trying to say. You know, because, you know, he said that we're haters and, you know.
I got a direct message on my Twitter account saying, I heard you're talking shit about me. No, I ain't talking shit about
you. Wow.
Get your facts straight. It's everybody else around your team that was talking to me about
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, let's make that clear. And let's make that clear. It was his whole camp was contacting us and letting us know what was going on. It was not us. We weren't digging for a prospect to expose a prospect that wasn't doing something. And we never asked you to come on the show. You know?
No, we actually didn't. You called in.
I personally want to root for the kid.
Right.
Same here.
Well, yeah.
But check this out. Hey, yo, Dave. You mind if I change gears before I get up out of here, man? I got one quick question, because maybe I'm just too high for my own good, but I actually think Chavez Jr.'s got a shot to spank Cotto. You know what I mean?
I agree with you.
Gabe, yeah, I mean, come on now. Let's face it, dude. Cotto, in my opinion, I don't think he could even stop Yuri Foreman if he didn't have that bum knee. People talk so much trash about Chavez Jr. that didn't even see the Duddy fight. Granted, dude was hyped up, protected, but he showed me a lot of shit in his arsenal. I mean, that can really, I'm going to put it this way, I'm putting my money on Chavez Jr. against Cotto.
You know, this is the thing, you know, is that I was really vocal about it, you know. I remember, Gay, we talked about this on the show and stuff, and I'm not going to sit and say I saw something from Chavez, and I'm not going to say that I've seen a change and he's done this. I've seen the exact same Chavez. But what I have seen in Cotto is a different Cotto, is a worn-out Cotto, not the same Miguel that we've seen in the past. And him fighting Yuri Foreman, a guy that just ran away. Cotto does great with guys that move backwards. He doesn't do good with guys that move forward. And Cotto's face is the one enemy that I think is going to be against him in that fight. Julio's going to be there just to help it out, but I think Cotto's face is just going to turn against him and bruise up and cut, where he's going to be stopped just because of that. Not because that Chavez is a better fighter than him. It's just that Cotto has given us great fights, and guess what? His body's finally betrayed him, and that's what it's going to come down to. That's why I'm picking against Chavez. Cotto.
That's a very possible scenario. I think one thing that fight fans, fight people are always resistant to is change. And what I mean by that is that they don't allow fighters to grow and to alter. And I think there's periods of time that fighters go through, particularly as they age, where they learn what their skills can do with what their body can do now. I think Miguel Cotto has kind of entered that phase, particularly the last couple fights. He found out just how fast he isn't, what he needed to fix against Pacquiao. And then against Foreman, I think he kind of learned how to deal with speed. I think you're right about the knee and the stoppage and all that. But But he was figuring things out. And to me, more than any fighter right now, well, maybe not more than any, but as much as the guy as a change, Cotto was a guy with an open mind in the ring. He realizes now he needs a game plan, but he's a guy that's always approached it every fight being ready for the moment and being able to change. We'll find out about Chavez Jr., but, you know, I'll tell you the one difference right now at this moment on this day is that Miguel Cotto knows to show up to training camp and have an eight-week training camp. And Chavez, two fights in a row, he had a four-week camp, and then he didn't even show up, so they had to cancel the fight. So based on that, I'm picking Cotto.
Wow. Dave, check this out, though, man. You said you didn't really see anything different, brother, but you didn't see him throw, like, 60 to 90 punches around with the same steam from the first to the 12th? When he had
no, you're right. Yeah, he did. He did. He did.
He did.
He did do that. But what I'm saying is that I don't – I've never been a pro Chavez Jr. fan, you know what I mean? I've always been really critical of him and stuff, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a fan of him, you know? I'm more of a fan of Cotto, and me personally, I thought that Cotto needs the rest. I guess you could kind of say I'm kind of being a prick about it because the fact is that you're going to have a guy make a name off of a warrior that really honestly deserves his time. And he's just so much of a warrior, he doesn't want to take the time off. He wants to be consistent. You know what I mean? He wants to be that fighter that gets in there and just keeps doing it and doing it. You know where we bitch about other fighters that don't want to get in the ring, he's a fighter that just keeps doing it. Where we're bitching about, like, yo, bro, you need to take it slow. Take a break. And he doesn't want to do that. You know, and that's why I'm going with that. You know what I mean? With the whole Chavez, it's not that Chavez is better than him. I don't think Chavez can box circles around Cotto, but I think he's getting a very subpar Cotto when they decide to fight in December. I think he's not getting the best of Cotto. Just like with Yuri Foreman, I didn't think he was getting the best of Cotto, and really, I still don't think he got the best of Cotto. You know, I don't think he got the best of Cotto at all. Cotto did exactly what he was supposed to do for a guy that was running backwards. And people saying that Manny Stewart, you know, he changed him. Manny didn't do nothing. He didn't change anything.
I saw differences. Just with his center of gravity, I saw differences. That he kind of pushed his – Cotto would always kind of be front side heavy. He would lean over with his shoulders and would kind of square him up, but made him always open for the uppercut. He's found a new problem in that now he's more straight up and he's kind of pushing his hips forward. Underneath them, like the deepest point of penetration, which basically kind of changes everything. Your whole center of gravity. You're able to shoot your jab a little bit different, push off that back foot, makes you more balanced.
Hey, I'm right here.
But what that's done is now he eats a right hand over the top a little bit worse than he did. He's got a new problem, but I think they can figure it out. Like this fight. I think the timing is right. I disagreed before, but I like it now.
I agree with you, Gabe. I actually think we've now seen Cotto go from young lion to grizzled vet. I think he took the proper steps in recognizing that and saying, okay, well, what can I change about myself a little bit? And that's to change it, you know, your strategist, someone like, you know, Manny, who does know how to game plan a fight, you know, and whether or not he can physically do it is a different story. But I do like the fact that Cotto is taking the proper steps in trying to, you know, elongate his career just a little bit longer than what we have seen. Because, I mean, considering the wars he's been in, considering the fights he's given us, you know, a guy of his stature could have retired after the Margarito fight, and we'd be like, thanks, champ. You know, and we wouldn't be upset about it. But I think he wants to show to himself, and I give him all the respect in the world for this. I've actually, over the years, have become quite the Cotto fan about this. And he just wants to do what's best for his career. And I do see this as a work in progress, so I won't necessarily, you know, downplay the performance against Foreman. I thought it was, you know, good in some spots, not so good in others. And you know, overall, I probably would say it's around the C-plus level. But I think there's room for improvement.
I think we're forgetting the fact that Yuri Foreman has no punch, and what did he do to his face? And you imagine a kid that hits harder than Yuri Foreman, what will he do to Cotto's face when he lands? And we're also forgetting that, you know, Cotto doesn't do well with guys that pressure him and they're bigger. Chavez is a much bigger kid and a kid that's going to come forward.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That's a good point.
You know, it's going to be a war, and it's going to be, like you said, kind of a race with his face. You know, how long can he take punishment? Can he get that left to the body on Chavez Jr.? I mean, if you've got suspect conditioning, and I don't even think Chavez Jr.'s conditioning is suspect. It definitely did it. You know, it's convicted of being bad. So if Cotto can get to that body, that's going to be a problem for him because it's a huge step up in class, regardless of what version you think of this or what you think of this version of Cotto. It's a huge step up in class for Chavez Jr. It's a lot of experience in that other ring, that other corner.
Let's not forget, Cotto's one of the few guys that can stop someone with one shot to the body. It's still.
Yeah.
Very true.
And it's a rare skill.
And you know what I like? You know what I like about this is that as Chavez, you know, he's got a good – he does throw some pretty good body shots, you know. Who's going to establish their body shots first? And I would say Cotto would have to be smart and to establish his first since he doesn't have to crouch, bend down a little bit to drop it. The body's going to be there, you know what I mean, at chest level.
Well, the only person that outbodied Cotto was Tony, you know, was Margarito. Other than that, I mean, he's been able to attack, you know, bodies at will, and I don't see Chavez being smart enough to guard against that. You know, I do think Cotto's going to be able to lay into him. I do think Cotto's going to be able to attack that right side of the body with his left hook, and we'll see what the kid's made of. You know, if he's legitimately a guy that we should be on the lookout for, he's going to withstand that and he's going to give it back. If not, he's going to fold under Cotto's pressure, too. I mean, people say, okay, Chavez is going to pressure him. But you know what? Cotto's going to pressure him right back. You know, Cotto's going to go after him a little bit, I think. I think this is a fight where he has to make a statement, you know, because a lot of people are picking against him now. And I think he feels that.
You know, and I'm going to, you know, like I said, I'm going to re-say this again, you know, and then also people are thinking like, oh, you're picking Cotto. This is what I'm predicting was going to happen. Cotto's going to be doing what he does, but I think his face is going to turn against him. You know what I mean? Where it's not going to be a Chavez beatdown. It's going to be a Cotto being great in what he does, but his face is just not going to hold up anymore. You know what I mean? Where it gets stopped, not because of what Chavez is doing. You know, Chavez is giving him a beatdown, but I think it gets stopped just because that Cotto's face can no longer hold up anymore to punches.
Well, I don't know. I think I think he's okay. I think he'll be okay with him. He's certainly not Israel Vasquez, where a jab basically busts open a gusher of blood. You know, but you know, you're right. I mean, he's also, you know, at the same time, he's not Bernard Hopkins, who's really never ever been cut in his life. You know. He's somewhere in between that. And, you know, yeah, we see some swelling, but you know what? You got to say, too, Foreman had a very stinging jab. Foreman also had a right hand over the top, which, you know, Gabe already pointed out. You know, it's one of those things where he did connect flush, you know, and it's one of those things where you kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think, you know, like I said, I don't think he's like Vasquez tissue soft, you know, skin up in the eye area. You know, but he's also not Bernard. I think he'll do fine. I don't think the swelling is going to play too much of a factor unless it goes really, really deep, which I don't really actually think it will.
Technique does that, yeah. Kind of like I was saying earlier, technique gives you power, you know, and singing. And so, like Calderon, it was like he landed, you know, if he had a punch, he landed some Sunday punches on Segura that would, you know, that would have just, that should have knocked any normal human being out. But he doesn't have any power, and Segura has a hell of a chin. You know, I think it's an intriguing fight. I remember the first time you guys brought it up on the show. I think it was like your second show or third show with us, Ernie. And I was like, you guys are tripping, you know. Now I'm like, I'm still picking Cotto, but you got me thinking, and it's a good fight. And you're absolutely right.
It's going to be a fun fight.
Why not?
I'll definitely watch it for sure. I wouldn't hesitate. Now, Hopkins Pascal, I've made my line in the sand. I don't care if it's free. If you buy me a TV for it, I'm not watching it. I just can't watch Bernard anymore.
Oh, I'm going to watch it. Hey, we only got a few seconds left here on Leaving the Ring. If you missed the entire show, you can catch it back on the archive. We had Angelo Dundee, Ivan Calderon, we had Giovanni Segura, and we also had Ponce de Leon on the show to talk about Ponce de Leon talking about his upcoming fight September 18th. Angelo Dundee reopening with Tom, the Fifth Street Gym, and Ivan and Gio talking about their epic fight that happened this past Saturday. Hey, once again, man, it's always a pleasure to speak to my two hosts, Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavion. Ernesto Gavion.
What's the damn Skype issue, man?
You know what? I think I need to change servers, man.
To be honest, I think I
need to get rid of AT&T. I've been going and looking through this and stuff. I think I'm just going to go to Comcast. I got Comcast already, so it shouldn't be hard, too hard of a switch over and stuff.
Yeah,
I think I'll get that done this week.
Yeah. You're dropping it, and it's affecting our connectivity because I haven't dropped all day.
Absolutely, man. All right, brothers. Well,
I just got my bumper for my iPhone, and I actually dropped more now than when I didn't have it. But,
take it off.
Yeah, it was wonderful, guys, to talk to you and chop up the fights. And, you know, everybody just have a great weekend. See you next week.
You as well.
All right, brothers. Hey. And thanks for tuning in and Leaving the Ring like always, guys. See you guys next week, Thursday. Should have a good show. Big show.
Yep. Later.
Bye.